Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the January 26th meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. Ramona, would you kindly call the roll?
Commissioner Christensen?
Here.
Commissioner Irving?
Here.
Commissioner Murphy?
Here.
Commissioner Topping?
Here.
Chairperson O'Grady?
Here. Everyone, please stand for the flag pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, at this time I would open the meeting to public comment. I do not have any speaker slips for public comment. I do have one speaker slip for agenda item number 3. So I'll just pause for a second. Any public comment for items not on today's agenda? Okay. In that event, I will close public comment and ask Ms. Griffin for planning staff updates.
Good morning, planning commissioners. It is 2012. It's your second meeting. You have your first full meeting as chair. So good luck, Mr. O'Grady.
Well, thank you very much. I'll need it, but I know I have a lot of support from my colleagues here, so if I mess up, I'll learn about it.
So I have nothing to specifically update you on, with the exception of at your last meeting, you did ask when the final EIR might be available for the Acceleron project, and we're projecting that availability to the public early next week, and we'll get you your copies sometime before then or by then, and we will hand deliver them to you in some fashion. So other than that, your agendas are looking pretty good, pretty normal, nothing large coming up except for the Acceleron project. So kind of nothing to warn you of. You're on a standard schedule, so no extra meetings so far.
Is the Acceleron project initial meeting scheduled for the 23rd of February?
It is tentatively scheduled for the 23rd of February.
Okay. A couple of commissioners have expressed concern to me about not getting the EIR until, you know, 2.5-3 weeks before the first meeting on Acceleron, and the feeling is they're feeling rushed, and that's not enough time to discuss the EIR for such a project. Based on our experiences with other large and complex projects last year. Now, I understand that we won't necessarily be discussing the EIR at the first meeting. So my opinion is that an EIR, 30 days, is not an unreasonable amount of time for the commission to do a thorough job of reviewing it. And anything less than that, I think, might compromise our ability to do that. So could you speak to what might happen on the 23rd?
Well, as you noted, you may not get to a discussion of the EIR on that day. We will try and provide you the EIR, hopefully, very, very soon. So you should have very, very close to 30 days to be looking at it. We're not talking about a couple of weeks from now. We're talking about a couple of days from now. Why do I sound like I'm in the bottom of a barrel? Oh, there we go.
I think they turned up the reverb on you, actually.
I sounded like the great and powerful Oz. So we'll try and get that to you just as soon as possible. And, yeah, I suspect because of the nature of the project, it will probably take you a couple of meetings to get through. In addition, that first meeting actually does have other regular Planning Commission's conditional use permit items on it. So if it does end up being an issue, and that can be part of your choice to the date you continue it to after the 23rd.
Okay, and of course we then have a meeting our first meeting in February as well to deal with. So do any other commissioners have any thoughts about this subject?
Thank you, Chair. I'm concerned that 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, is just not enough time before the first meeting to even understand the project.
There's a second item on farm supply, a building addition, and then there's a third item on some legislative matters regarding zip lines and bungee jumping and other. It's going to be a very interesting topic, I think, today. But just trying to look ahead, there is a possibility that the commission would be able to wrap up our deliberations before 1:30. So I might see how it goes. I might schedule our break for a little bit later rather than earlier to get it more in the middle of this time period. So we'll kind of play that by ear. Let's see. Yeah, Commissioner Irving, did you
move for approval of the consent agenda?
Oh, I did have some other commission business, and then I'd be happy to entertain that. I think it's important to respond to citizen concerns, and so as I read the newspapers and see something that pertains to our to business that our commission has considered, I think it's important to respond. And I appreciate the letter from Mr. William Tuck of Paso Robles. It was in the paper last week. And it concerned the wine tasting facility and expansion of the Law Family Vineyards that this commission approved at our last meeting. And Mr. Tuck expressed concern about water consumption by that project, and felt like that this commission had not, nor staff had not delved into that, and I just wanted to ask Mr. Tuck to take another look at the video and assure him that the staff and commission did discuss the water issue and found that the project would be acceptable. So anyway, I just wanted to let Mr. Tuck know that we take his concerns seriously indeed. Okay. Mr. Irving, you're on for a...
Oh, I'm move for approval of the consent agenda.
Can I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. Ramona, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes unanimously. Ramona, would you please introduce hearing item number one?
Continued hearing of a request by Brad Stahl for a reconsideration of a minor use permit. County file number DRC 2007-00184. Supervisorial District Number 3, Brian Pedrotti, Project Manager.
Okay, Mr. Pedrotti, would you just kindly explain what's happening on this item, which was going to be continued, but then we have a document this morning that says maybe we don't need to do that?
Yes.
Okay.
Brian Pedrotti, County Planning. As you may know, the general plan conformity report that was on consent agenda and this item are related. The property was acquired by General Services, and therefore the applicant has withdrawn the minor use permit because they no longer own it. So we do have that letter, and so that's been done.
So I take it from your comments there's no action required this morning on the part of the commission?
Correct. No action required.
Okay. Thank you. Then that item is closed. Did you have a comment, Commissioner Christensen?
Well, that item's in my district, so I've been watching it for like 3 years, and I'm happy it's been dealt with.
And I think I read that thing over about 3 times, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. I hope it ended up successfully for everyone concerned. All right. Okay. Ramona, would you then please introduce hearing item number two?
Hearing to consider a request by Farm Supply Templeton for a conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2010-00082. Supervisorial District 1, Holly Phipps, Project Manager.
Okay. Ms. Phipps, good morning. Love to hear your staff report.
Thank you, Chairman O'Grady, and good morning to the rest of the commissioners. Before us today is a request by Farm Supply of Templeton for a conditional use permit to allow the construction of a 5,000-square-foot metal building. This will become a hay barn. And the addition of approximately 2,000 square feet for to enclose one side of an existing overhang to an existing warehouse and to add an addition on the other side. The project, this would be enclosed here. This addition here is a new addition to that building, and then here is the location of the hay barn. There's no, in the floor plans, there was no indoor plumbing, so there's no increase to water use. An aerial look at this image and then just a closer look. Here we have the elevations. And here's the existing warehouse. And you can see the covered addition here, and then where the other addition would go. The project has been designed to meet the Templeton Design Plan guidelines. There are a few of them that were partially met, and I'd like to address those, and one that was not. So on page 2-4, DC2, fence materials. Fences visible from public streets should be constructed of high-quality materials. While the front existing now, the front has wrought iron and brick pilasters. And the sides and rear has chain link fencing. A previous use permit on this site that was approved back in 2003 allowed an adjustment modification to allow the slatted chain link fencing. Currently, there is no slats in the chain link fencing, and I was unable to determine why this never occurred and how it got finaled without that. So we would like to carry over that waiver modification, and we have that in our findings and conditions. Also, while on page 2-4, top of page, after it says staff comment, staff would like to edit the last sentence. Please remove "or" and replace with the word "and." And the sentence would now read, the project is designed and will be conditioned to be consistent with its design standards in the Templeton Community Design Plan.
Got it.
One of the other park guidelines was parking lot transition space. The intent of this guideline is to avoid parked cars right up next to the building walls. After reexamining this particular guideline, staff has concluded the condition has been met because there's where the parking is proposed in front of the warehouse sales building, it's a covered walkway, so the parking isn't abutted right up against to the building, but to an overhang. And then the building A on the west side, okay, that was building A. And building B, no parking is proposed in that area, so we feel this guideline has been met. A few days ago, the applicant submitted a revised landscape plan. The applicant agreed to plant more trees around the majority of the parking lot to ensure, for this particular guideline, that there was proper tree canopy. That is also conditioned in 3, so we're still good with that. They can just submit that revised plan at that time. Pedestrian movements. The intent of this was so that pedestrians would walk parallel to moving cars. Public Works has reviewed the project and had no safety concerns. The parking lot on the west side of Building A is parallel and runs to traffic, and then you have this, it's parallel. And then where the new hay barn is, it's kind of perpendicular. So we feel, sometimes staff takes a very hard look at these guidelines, but if you back it back out, I think the intent has been met. The agent may like to add additional comments to that. And here's the revised site plan. It's just more trees that they've incorporated to what they've already submitted. And with that, staff is recommending approval of this conditional use based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Phipps. If commissioners have any questions that are best asked at this time, I'd entertain those. But otherwise, if you would hold your questions until it's brought back to the commission. Oh, yes, Ms. Christensen.
I just had one question for the applicant, maybe they could address it, and that is about the parking, about why there is so much parking when there isn't required.
Used to having it on all the time. I wanted to ask us about to the applicant so they could address it during the presentation. And that was about the parking, about why there is so much parking, and when it isn't required, and just the idea that if there's more parking, there's more landscaping, there's more water use. I just kind of wanted to know the reasoning behind that. Thank you.
Okay. All right. At this time, if the applicant would like to. Make his presentation.
Good morning, members of the commission.
Good morning.
Tim Woodall with Paulson, as well as all of the conditions of approval, and respectfully request your approval today. With respect to landscaping, yes, it was a condition that arose with respect to Templeton Community Design Plan standards talking about shading parking lots. And as a result of that, we went back to our landscape architect. And this is one of those hybrid sites. It's a combination of existing landscaping as well as new landscaping. We've provided a revised landscape plan that our landscape architect in our office feels certainly meets the standard. I don't believe Holly has distributed conditions, but that certainly would be a part of the construction documents for the project. This project, even though it's a fairly small project, is a bit of a model project in terms of the new LID requirements that we're all beginning to see. Through some creative negotiations and some creative engineering, we're able to actually solve not only our drainage problem, but the drainage problem of some adjacent parcels. So we're pretty pleased with the solution, again, given the relative size and scale of the project. In terms of the architecture, trying to keep it simple, keep it consistent with the existing buildings. With respect to parking, our parking requirement is, bear with me for a second, 34 spaces. We're actually providing 52 spaces. And quite frankly, that's based on our experience with Farm Supply, their customer base, the fact that we think that with a higher visibility at this location, that there will be demand for the additional parking. And really, that's frankly what drove it. There is one clarification that I'm looking for, and I think I know the answer to it, but when Holly spoke to, or Ms. Phipps, excuse me, spoke to the original chain link fencing not having slats, I think I heard her to use the term extend the waiver, which is a little bit ambiguous to me. I'm not sure if that means install the slats or continue with the existing condition and not install the slats. And frankly, we don't have a strong feeling either way, but we'd like some clarification.
Ms. Phipps, could you clarify that right now?
The condition would require them to install the slats in the chain link fence. The waiver was allowing a lesser quality of material, even though I'm sure that chain link fence cost a lot of money.
Okay, so the slats are covered in the conditions as written now. Does that clarify that for you, Mr. Woodall?
Yes, it does. Okay, thank you.
Good.
It's a minor point in this deliberation, but I would also like to point out that Farm Supply has been a successful business in this county for over 62 years, and we hope to continue for another 62.
Okay, does that conclude your presentation then?
Yes, it does. Okay, unless there are additional questions.
Well, there may be some. Commissioner, yes, Mr. Irving.
Thank you. Just a couple of quick questions. On the landscaping plan that you have submitted a revised landscaping plan then, or you will be?
No, we have.
You have?
Yes.
So do we have a graphic on that that's a little clearer than what you showed, Ms. Phipps? Great. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Ms. Phipps, if you need more, I've got additional copies here.
Thank you. The other question, this will probably answer my question. At our last meeting, we approved a project north of Paso that had a tremendous amount of landscaping that will completely shield that project. And so I was just curious to see how much landscaping you're going to add. That's, as you know, that's a fairly barren-looking site now with all the big yard where all the stone and construction materials are served. So you will be landscaping along the frontage there of Ramada.
That is correct. In addition to cleaning up the existing landscaping, we do intend to add pretty substantial landscaping along the frontage as well.
Great. And then the other question I had to do with you touched on the comment about drainage, and I was curious as to what you were doing with any kind of a water catchment system coming off of the existing roof line, and if you could expand on the improved drainage design.
We did actually look at a water catchment system. As some of you may be familiar, I'm an advocate of catchment systems. We've done it on a number of our large winery projects. In looking at this particular project, given the relatively small size of the roofs and the capital investment that's associated with that, we chose not to go in that direction. What we are doing is we're sheet flowing the project back. We're collecting water at the back of the site that historically has free flowed, and then we're sending it to an infiltration basin.
The infiltration basin is on the site or off-site?
It's off-site.
Off-site. And so, but you said you were correcting the situation with some of the neighboring properties as well?
The historical flow has moved across property lines.
Okay. So it's an improvement.
I would say so.
Okay. Thank you. With regards to this landscape plan that was, I guess it's a revised landscape plan, drawing L1.0 dated October 6, 2011. Ms. Phipps, are you comfortable that this is an acceptable plan?
Yes, but I misspoke earlier, and so I'd like to add a new condition regarding the slats. It is in the findings about the slats, but I unfortunately did not carry over an exact condition stating slats, so we'd like to modify the landscaping language, and we'd like to add 3C.
What page of the
statute? 214.
214, 3C, okay.
And we'd like to add, the landscape plan shall include appropriate notes that slats will be installed in an existing chain link fence.
Okay. Thank you for that update. But as far as the landscape plan, that is an acceptable, revised plan is acceptable.
Yes.
So I'd just like the record to show that this is now the official plan.
On the landscaping, I don't see any requirement for screening on the front along Ramada. There's no specific screening requirement in the Templeton area plan for this project regarding view from 101 or from Ramada to screen the project.
I believe that was a planning area standard. Section 221080, ground landscaping or fencing is required around the properties to view from.
But if I could just add to that, Nancy Orton, County Planning, this is a commercial service area, and so the expectation is not that the entire building would be screened, because it is a business area. People expect to be able to see. Okay. Some of the business activities. So we felt like the existing fencing with the landscaping would soften the appearance and make the field, make the business look attractive, but it doesn't have to be fully screened.
Okay, and then on the drainings, there is a considerable increase in hard surface and asphalt and even base. So my only concern, I see they've got some type of retention in the back of the property that apparently it's going to retain water at a gravel structure.
Correct.
But there's still going to be runoff off-site, but there is a retention facility that it drains into.
I believe there is a retention facility. Tim,
or maybe the applicant.
Mr. Whittle, maybe you can explain.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, there is a retention basin on site. And then, again, we've created an easement and pipe to an overflow basin as well that's off-site.
They will be responsible. Under the current ordinance, they are responsible for accepting and dealing with their stormwater.
Because they've got this LID measure across the back of the property, this, like, that's bioretention soil, 5 feet wide, 300 feet long, and 2 foot deep.
Yeah, that is correct.
I would assume that's to capture rainwater during flows.
Capture, infiltrate, and I believe they're putting in the storm drain as well across the neighboring property into an existing system for overflow.
That's accurate, yes.
And that was to minimize the damage to their neighbors. I expect that was the reasoning for that.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Topping, we're still in the applicant presentation portion of our meeting. Did you have a question for Mr. Whittle? Okay. Thank you. Okay. I'll open the – thank you, Mr. Whittle.
Thank you.
We'll open the meeting to public comment. However, I do not have a speaker slip, so I see no one rushing forward to speak or grab a speaker slip, so I will close public comment. Bring it back to the commission for further deliberations. Mr. Topping.
Yeah, I drove by there the other day, and actually you can see that even as far as it's gone, it seems to be going in a good direction as far as the fencing and the pilasters and the existing landscape. It looks nicer than the areas nearby. And I guess my question is, the design guidelines, we kind of interpret on a case-by-case basis, right? So in a case like this, the metal buildings, it's too late to deal with that except for the improvements that are being done on the new additions. And so that's how those that guideline, which discourages metal buildings, is met, right? Is that basically it says.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Yes.
And I'll keep this very brief. A bit of historical perspective. I've been doing this for many, many years, and I actually was one of the architects that participated in the creation of the Templeton Community Design Plan. I've lived in Templeton for 25 years. Was also a member of TAG for many, many years. In any case, when the Templeton Community Design Plan discussion was taking place, really the focus, at least my recollection of the focus, was let's avoid these half and 12 or 1 and 12 airport-type hangar buildings that we weren't. It was not really our intent to preclude metal on any level, as you can see on the buildings that are on Calmetto Place and Ramada Drive, for example. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Topping,
thank you very much.
Further?
I kind of wanted to get that clarified, because the question always, when you have design guidelines, is how are we doing, and is this helping or not? And I think it is. I think it's on balance. This project goes very nicely towards where those guidelines were headed.
Before we go any further here, I neglected to ask commissioners if they had any ex parte to report. This commissioner does. I actually had a conversation with staff. Person, Ms. Phipps, I just had a few questions about her staff report. And with that, I'll get to some of those questions right now. Excuse me. Ms. Phipps, you'd mentioned that slats were supposed to have been added previously, a long time ago, but never were. And, you know, who knows why. So, and as we had discussed on the phone, you told me that the department had instituted a new checklist type of procedure. Perhaps you'd like to elaborate a little bit on that might help catch some of these things.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Chairman O'Grady. Since I've been at the department, we have what we call the Tidemark computer tracking system. And so when a construction permit comes in, they look at the APN and then what use permits were associated with that APN. And so then the land use permit will come up. It will be sent up to the planner, the construction permit. Then the planner will pull up that use permit and will go through there and pull out all the conditions that will apply prior to construction, during construction, and prior to final. and we can put that into the system. So when the planners and inspectors are out in the field, that they know that those conditions have to be met. And then Planning Division will actually have the final look at the project to make sure those conditions have been met also.
Sounds like an excellent improvement to me. Okay. I think most of my questions have been answered, but let me just skip through here and make sure. Oh, yes, water. I think you said in your presentation that there would be no indoor water use. There's no fixtures in the additional structures that are to be built. However, there is additional landscaping, correct? So there will be additional water use on the site over and above what has been used. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, there's an existing water service, which presumably will remain.
Yes.
That's not being modified. In other words, will this project necessitate an increase in the size of the meter? Which
the project did incorporate some design guidelines into their project that specifically will run back to the landscaping, bioswales with landscaping, downspout disconnect with water that runs into the landscaped areas. Because remember back in the olden days, we might have had landscaping that was up.
I'm not that old. Sorry about that. I couldn't resist.
Now the idea is to have those areas recessed so that water can run into the landscaped areas. I believe I'll let the applicant address.
Yeah, I think Mr. Woodle can answer that question.
Okay, wonderful.
Yeah, point of clarification. This particular parcel sits in kind of an odd location geographically. The fire protection water is provided by the Templeton Community Water Services District, but the on-site domestic use is via an on-site well.
Uh-huh.
So it's a little bit of an odd animal. Certainly, and that's one of the reasons that, and obviously the ordinance, that led us to implementing these LID measures. Understood.
Okay. All right. Wait a second. Okay, I note condition 3C has been added as previously described by Ms. Phipps. And those are all my questions. I don't see any other speaker. Commissioner Light's on. So, Commissioner Irving, this is in your
yes.
District 1.
Thank you. I move approval of conditional use permit DRC 2010-00082 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B as modified this morning.
Second.
Okay. Is there any further discussion by the Commission? Seeing none, Ramona, please call the roll.
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Congratulations to the applicant.
Thank you. Could I just say one thing, Mr. Chairman?
Certainly.
I'm Jim Brayback with Farm Supply. I just want to echo what Tim said about your county planning staff. Okay. We're not developers, but everybody I've dealt with down here has been courteous, professional, sensitive to time that we're trying to get things done, and no attitudes except positive. And I just want to thank you for that.
So that's very kind of you to say that. Appreciate that. Okay. Okay, we'll move on to hearing item number 3. Ramona, would you please introduce it?
Commission business. Request for an interpretation using section 22.02.030 of the Land Use Ordinance relating to zip lines and similar rural recreation activities. All supervisorial districts. Jason Giffen, Director, Planning and Building.
Good morning.
Mr. Giffen, before you launch into your staff report, I would just like a clarification from County Council. This is not a quasi-judicial item, so is ex parte is not relevant for this particular hearing. Is that correct?
I believe so. You're correct, being an interpretation of our ordinance.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Giffen, good morning.
Good morning, Chairman O'Grady, Commissioners. This morning we're going to be talking about some emerging uses that we've been recently getting inquiries on related to, I'll just call them recreational uses. We're using a method in the land use ordinance which allows us to bring forward an interpretation. We have a recommendation as the department, but we're also going to be presenting to you a range of options. This is something that we don't come to lightly. We interpret the ordinance every day at the front counter and just, for example, like Ms. Phipps did previously on the previous item. But what we're faced with is a new use that we need some assistance from the commission through an interpretation on helping define the use and identifying their allowable status and whether or not there would need to be some type of follow-up action for some of the options. So Assistant Director Cammy Griffin is going to walk through our recommendation as well as the options and giving you some background on some of the new and emerging uses, which frankly, until we put this presentation together, we hadn't heard of a couple of them either. So with that, I'll turn it over to Cammy. And it should be fun, especially if she goes through her slides. You'll probably see her smile.
We should hope so.
Thank you. Cammy Griffin, County Planning and Building Staff. As Jason mentioned, we have recently, in the last 3 to 4 months, started to receive inquiries about a set of rural recreation uses that at the time that we wrote our definitions in the land use ordinance back in 1980, either didn't exist or we hadn't thought of. So we're now faced with how to answer these individual inquiries about how to establish these various uses. They're clearly not specifically defined in our land use ordinance, but we do have two existing outdoor rural recreation definitions that do exist. And I'll talk about those in detail a little later. The new types of uses that we're getting inquiries on include all of these various outdoor recreation uses. And I'm just going to briefly go through and try and explain each of them to you because I think that there might be some potential for confusion on a couple of them. So the first is zip lining, and that's basically a cable that's suspended above an incline that you go from one fixed point to another fixed point. Typically, these operate on gravity. They can have typically found in associated with tours, for instance, if you go to New Zealand. My niece happened to bungee jump off of a very tall bridge in New Zealand. I personally think she was nuts, but people do enjoy this. So the next is a giant swing. This was one of those that we had never heard of until we had a request come in at the front counter to establish one of these. It's a system that you suspend a seat, or in this case, double seats, between two poles. You're winched back, and then you're let go to swing over the landscape like a swing set swing. So this is different from a bungee. The next are ropes courses, and these are usually challenge courses. They're often used for team building or personal development. They usually have high and low elements, you maneuver over the ropes. Sometimes you have to be hooked in, like when you're doing mountain climbing, but oftentimes it's low enough to the ground that it's just a balancing challenge. The next are mountain bike courses, and there's a number of different types of mountain bike courses. And this is different from mountain biking done on trails that are multi-use trails, just designated trails that you can go and ride your mountain bike on whenever. I could go and ride my mountain bike on a designated multi-use trail anytime. These are actually courses that are set up for racing. And you can have a downhill course, which is usually a single rider riding against time, and it often has bridges or jumps or banked curves associated with it, but they're typically single track, very small, negotiating obstacles at a pretty high rate of speed. You can also have side-by-side courses where riders compete against one another, and you can have cross-country courses where, again, it's a timed course set up with obstacles. And then there's cable ski lakes. These are something that exist in Florida and Texas. A number of them exist in Florida and Texas, actually. And they're a system of suspended cables that pull either a water skier or a wakeboard or across a lake instead of a boat. So it basically replaces a boat pulling a wakeboard or a water skier. And with a wakeboard circumstance, you usually have rails and ramps and things set up that allow the wakeboarders to do the kind of tricks that they normally do behind a boat using the wake. It's very similar, actually, to a skateboard park. It just happens to be on water. And as I said, these are established. There's a number of them established in Florida and Texas that I'm familiar with. I'm sure there's many others elsewhere, too. And the last is bicycle motocross. And these are courses that are specifically designed for bicycle motocross racing. Again, racing, not just I'm going to go out and ride my BMX bike. And they're usually set up in a lap formula. They have jumps and rises and dips. So this is an example that I found on the web. It was the best picture I could find of what a course might look like. This obviously is a very fancy course. Typically, they're dirt, and you don't have the nice grass in between and things like that. But they are a spectator sport, and typically multiple bikes race in a lap format. So going on to the existing definitions in our land use ordinance currently, we have two outdoor rural or outdoor recreation type definitions. And these are just smaller. This isn't the entire definition. The definitions are really long. So what I tried to do was give you an idea of the types of uses that are associated with each of these definitions. And what I also wanted to point out with this slide is that you'll see that including and such as are in yellow. So I think the intent was when these were written that the uses that were listed after including or such as were not the be-all and end-all of the uses that might be associated with the land use ordinance. It basically says you'll look at all the information and ascertain an interpretation and then forward that onto the board. As Mr. Giffen says, we don't use this lightly. The planning director and planning staff regularly interpret the ordinances, and it's only when we are completely stumped that we use this interpretation. The last time that staff brought forward an interpretation was on medical marijuana, as an example, medical marijuana dispensaries. We had an inquiry for a medical marijuana dispensary. We had something in our ordinance called pharmacy, but we weren't certain that that was equivalent, so we used this provision to go forward to Planning Commission and the board and ask for an interpretation. So your options. We've provided five options for each, specifically to zip lines, but also then to those other rural recreation uses. And they're generally the same options both specifically for zip lines and the other rural recreation uses. So I'm just going to quickly go through the options. So the first option is to determine that the use is accessory to the primary use of a site. And this equates with option 1 on pages 3-5 and 3-10. So basically, this is a case-by-case determination based on size and scale and how the facility would be operated, whether or not it's accessory to a primary use of the site. The zoning clearance that would be issued would be based on the project description provided by the applicant and would be specific based on that project description. So it wouldn't be, for instance, just a giant swing. It would be giant swing as an accessory use to organizational camp, as an example. However, there are instances where these uses could be primary uses, and in that case, staff is recommending that a permit level and standards should be established when they become primary uses. The second option, which is described on pages 3-6 and 3-10, is to determine equivalency. So in the land use ordinance, there's a section that says where something's not listed and you can determine that it's equivalent to a use that is existing, then you can use the standards and permit level of that use for the not listed use. For instance, we use this all the time with animals. When we got our first llama and we didn't have specific standards for llamas, we said, what does a llama equate to in the animals that we do have listed? So there is the ability for your commission to find these uses equivalent to the uses that are listed. We've listed the uses here in the rural recreation and camping definition. It's staff's opinion that these uses better fall into this category than the outdoor sports and recreation, and I'll talk about that as part of option 5. So these are the actual listed uses in that definition currently. So you could find that these uses are equivalent to one or more of these listed uses. And you wouldn't have to find that it was the same in every case. So you could find that a giant swing is equivalent to a hunting and fishing club, and a downhill mountain bike course is equivalent to a Dude and Guest ranch, for example. The next option, option 3, which is outlined on pages 3-6 and 3-11, are to add these uses specifically to the definition of rural recreation and camping. So specifically list these new uses and perhaps even a general category of, you know, other rural recreation uses. And with that, set a permit level in table 2-2, and perhaps evaluate the need to set very specific standards for either all or some of the uses. The next option, option 4, described on pages 3-6 and 3-11, are to do a combination of the last two options. So find the use equivalent to a use that's already defined in the rural recreation and camping definition in the meantime while a cleanup amendment is being done to add those uses specifically to the definition. The last option is to not use the rural recreation and camping definition as it exists in the bowl in residential single family, residential multifamily. again, that was a concern that staff had in using this definition. We felt that the bicycle motocross courses might be unusual in that it perhaps doesn't fit in either the rural recreation and camping or the outdoor sports and recreation definitions, and instead would be better to add to the definition of off-road vehicle course Currently, this definition applies to motorized vehicles, so motorcycles and, well, typically motorcycles. So our recommendation is that it be, that bicycle motocross be specifically added to the off-road vehicle course definition. And this would, again, make it not allowable in ag, but it would be allowable in rural lands. So you did receive a number of letters, and I do have one more letter that came in that I'm going to hand out. It came in late this morning. It went to the wrong staff person. Most of these letters are, you've gotten a few letters of support, but you did have one letter from North County Watch that raised a few issues, and I just wanted to try and touch on the high points in response to the issues raised in that letter. Specifically, the letter was discussing the Santa Margarita Adventures ziplining operation that is established and operating today. That was one of the reasons that were before you as part of the interpretation. So in addition to the inquiries that we've had for bicycle motocross and downhill mountain bike courses and cable ski lakes, and giant swings, we actually do have an operating business that we need to respond to and don't have a current response today. So the first issue that was raised is that this use wouldn't be allowed in the open space easements for the agricultural cluster subdivision that's been approved on that property. And in fact, the agricultural cluster subdivision has been approved on that property. However, it is not recorded, and there are no current open space easements recorded associated with that subdivision as the subdivision has not recorded yet. The next contention is that it's a nonconforming use. We don't feel that that applies because we don't know what the use is yet. That's what we're asking your commission today to make a recommendation to the board on. There was a contention in the letter that tree removal and grading has occurred on the site. We have not inspected the operation, so we don't know that to be the case or not. It very well may be, in which case we would address that based on the determination made by the board for this operation associated with the building permits. There was a line in the letter that said that a conditional use permit was required for a secondary use on the property, and I was confused by that, in all honesty. Typically, conditional use permits are not required for secondary uses. Accessory uses are allowed more typically through zoning clearances, or often just by right. And did want to let the commission know that a business license was issued for agritourism and vineyard tours as allowed accessory uses. What wasn't specifically mentioned to the Planning and Building Department at the time of the business license and zoning clearance issuance was that the ziplining canopy tours were associated with that. And so we feel that the business license for vineyard tours is fine. Typically, those occur by driving folks on the site. You walk through the vineyards. You're taught about how certain irrigation methods are done. You're taught about the varieties of grapes. It's not uncommon to have vineyard tours associated with the large vineyards in our county. So with that, staff is making a recommendation. It's very specifically laid out on 3-1 of your staff report, actually 3-1 and 3-2. It does bleed onto the second page. In general, it's to add the definitions of these other rural recreation uses to the definition of rural recreation and camping, with the exception of the bicycle motocross courses, to set permit levels and standards as necessary for these uses, and to also find that the current operation, zipline operation of Margarita Adventures associated with...
speaker slips. I'm inclined to proceed with a public comment and take the break after public comment unless any commissioners feel the need. Commissioner Topping.
That might take a little bit longer than you
need. Oh, okay. So please, at any time during public comment, if any commissioner feels like a break is appropriate, please let the chair know, and I will so order one. The first speaker is David Blakely. On deck is Doug Cascarden.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is David Blakely, and I live in Santa Margarita. And first of all, I want to thank you all for the work that you do for the residents of San Luis Obispo County. I want to say at the offset that I am not for or against zip lines or giant swings or BMX races at all. Not for or against them. But I am for a fair, consistent, and equitable enforcement of the county codes. The staff is talking about this being an interpretation. Well, I don't believe that it really is, because it's clear, if you look at Table 2-2 that I just passed out to you, that these proposed uses are not allowed in these land use categories. There's no interpretation there. The staff more or less says that later on in their staff report. It's simply not an allowable use. If you want to make an allowable use as the result of your discussions today, then go for it. And the way you do that is by processing a general plan amendment to allow this use to take place in these land use categories. I have three major concerns. These changes will be introducing a commercial use into ag areas and must be properly evaluated. In the ag areas, these uses should never be primary. The ag use should be primary. The environmental and community impacts of the projects must be appropriately addressed, and a discretionary permit seems to be one of the best tools to do that. The general plan must be followed. These uses are not allowed in the current general plan, and they should be allowed by doing a general plan amendment. I don't agree with your staff's recommendation that the use should be considered differently if the use is primary or secondary. The concerns I have with this line of thinking is that the impacts associated with these uses is exactly the same, whether it's a primary or secondary use, and it's the impacts that need to be mitigated. It is my hope that if this use is allowed, that the impacts associated with this use would be appropriately mitigated and the community concerns get addressed. The commercial use impacts must be mitigated. Noise, visual impacts, habitat impacts, traffic are just a few of the potential areas of concern. The best way to do this is by the use of a discretionary permit after the general plan amendment allows this use. I support option 3 because I believe it gives your planning commission an opportunity to comment on what should and should not be allowed in these certain land use designations. You should have these discussions before it gets passed on to the Board of Supervisors. You need to determine what uses should be allowed and what level of permitting should be required. I think that's an appropriate activity for the Planning Commission. I've handed you Table 2-2 of the general plan, and I tried to find where zip lines would fit into that. They don't. They're not allowed in the current plan, and it's not an interpretation. It would require a change. So I'm not opposed to these uses, but I think the proper way to allow them is to amend the general plan with the direction of the Planning Commission to the Board of Supervisors. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Blakely. Mr. Cascarden, and when I say someone is on deck, that means if that person would kindly come up to the vacant podium so we could help expedite things. On deck is Nathaniel Lewis. Good morning, Mr. Cascarden. Cascarden. I'm sorry. I think
Doug Cascarden.
Cascarden.
There
okay.
You go.
Thank you.
Templeton resident. I have a history going back with the ranch to the early 90s somewhere. It's a special place in our, I guess, our whole county for what's there, the stuff that exists. You know, in my personal background, I'm very active with outdoor recreation and other things, and anywhere from, you know, beach cleanups to trail work days to anything in between. In a professional background, do a lot of taking care of the land, management, and other things, and, you know, properly trying to design things for the public to see and use. I consider this to be a you know, a low impact, appropriate secondary use for some of these kinds of ag lands. It's a great way to get the public out there, teach them, you know, what's going on with the land, how they can see it, use it in appropriate ways. It's another outlet for, you know, healthy outings and activities for a family or anybody.
Of the land use ordinance. I think I can speak on behalf of most mountain bikers in saying that SLO is an incredible place to ride, in part by organizations like Triple CMB, and also because of the natural beauty and terrain of this county. This incredible terrain extends into our agricultural lands and provides us, both landowners and the public, with a unique opportunity that we can all benefit from. Through the recreation activities listed in this interpretation, the public can gain access into these beautiful areas, and the landowners can provide a unique experience with a help which will help brand these products and offset their costs. These recreation activities are all based on the conscientious use of the area and would require minimal development with little impact on the land and surrounding communities. The main goal of having recreational activities on agricultural land is to help the public gain a better appreciation for the lands that make the products derived from them unique. From my experience as a recreational trail builder, the best trails are the ones that showcase the natural terrain of a landscape, such as rock outcroppings and unique vegetation. This provides the trail user with a unique and personal experience with the land, and when paired with the information on stewardship, natural history, and the current use of the area, complements the goals of both landowners and conservationists. I think we are all here this morning because we wish to preserve the features that make our county unique and ensure that our lands are used wisely. The recommendation to interpret these activities as rural recreation provides a means to instill value upon these lands for both landowners and the public while preserving their natural qualities. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Next up is Blake Rowan, and on deck is Jamie Kirk.
Hi, my name is Blake Rowan. I live in San Luis Obispo. I was born and raised here in San Luis. I work with All At Events and with Margarita Adventures. One of the big things that we've been talking about with the zip line and with what it does for the local economy is bringing in more people to the area. It brings more people in with the ag tourism, looking specifically at the products that we produce on the ranch, whether it be, in our case, beef and vineyards, as well as when I've looked into other studies in other states such as Washington, Indiana, and Michigan, whatever they produce there. Some of the studies that they had done show that there was a 33% increase in the ag sales that they had in their primary use. So the secondary use was used to help market their brand, which is one of the big things that we're doing on the ranch. We're also minimizing the impact of having people out on the ranch. We only are taking a few people out at a time. There's very minimal things done. That allows people to see the natural environment and how it is. We're lucky enough to be able to have that opportunity, and we want to share it with people both in the community and outside. This is another reason for people to be coming back to the San Luis Obispo area, as well as coming here for the first time, as we've had many people already talking to us, either excited to come or saying, oh, this is our first time in the area, and it's an amazing chance to see it. So I support the recommendation that's been put forth, and I hope we can continue showing people the area here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Rowan. Up next is Jamie Kirk, and on deck is Kristen Horowitz.
Good morning. My name is Jamie Kirk. I'm a resident of Atascadero. I would like to take a few seconds to talk about the staff recommendation. I do support, if we're looking at these uses as accessory uses, I do support the staff recommendation, which the option one in the staff report and recommendation four in the actual recommendations. And I think this is a great interpretation that the staff is coming forward with, because these are uses that should be allowed in our rural areas as accessory uses, but looked at on a case-by-case basis. And if we move on to these uses as a primary use, being the primary use of the property, I do agree with option three in looking at implementing land use standards for these as primary uses. We did receive, your commission did receive a letter from North County Watch, so I'd like to take a couple minutes just to talk through some of those issues brought up in the letter because they do pertain to Santa Margarita Ranch. I'd like to start with, you know, feeling a little disappointed receiving the letter. We understand that they do have some opposition to residential development on the ranch, but we thought that they would embrace these types of low-intensity residential uses occurring. And these uses provide an opportunity for the public to access and enjoy this beautiful ranch. The ranch tours, including the canopy tours, are an opportunity for the owners to bring people out and educate them about the agricultural resources and the natural and historic resources that are out there, with restrictions put forward with an open space agreement. I would like to point out they brought up some concerns about California codes. The zip line was designed and engineered in accordance with standard mechanical engineering and they call it the challenge course and canopy zip line tour standards. And industry standards do require it to be inspected on a yearly basis, and that inspection just recently occurred. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kirk. Next is Kristen Horowitz, and on deck is Rob Rossi.
Good morning. I just wanted to introduce myself. I'm Kristen Horowitz. I just got married. Sorry.
Congratulations.
And I live in San Luis Obispo, and I am part of All Out Events, which is partnered with Margarita Adventures. But I want to speak more to the general use because I think it's important that this is valuable to the entire community to understand it. I'm someone who, despite living here for a long time, I stayed a registered voter in my county because there was an issue with whether or not they should enforce an ag preserve in my community. And I really wanted an ag preserve because, unfortunately, it didn't work, and the area around where I grew up has become houses. And that's what's really valuable about this county. I think everyone here agrees with that. And what's amazing about the ability to do this agritourism is that I'm also have an animal science background, and there is it's very difficult to make a living with agriculture in general. So this is one way that the ranchers and the farmers can find a way to not only boost sales by bringing the experience to people and really appreciating it, but also to make people appreciate the land. I've been on multiple tours with the zip line, as well as worked with Cal Poly Rec students. And I give them a tour, and I'm also an English professor, so I'd sit there and say, well, what do we have to learn from this? And I talked about us coming before the commission. And basically what they said was, you know, we had no idea. We thought it was just going to be a zip line, but what the actual value was to us was the tour. We spend a lot of time talking about the land. We talk about the cattle. We talk about the animals. And the ranch itself is an SIP, which is Sustainability and Practice Certified Ranch. So, you know, we talk about how we didn't move the trees and that the vineyards built around them and how that makes it difficult, but that's what's important. And every single feedback I've gotten from these students when I say, okay, so at the end of the tour, what value did you find? They said, wow, I had no idea. It was so great to be on this ranch and to feel this and to see it and to see it from all angles. And so my point here is basically that not only does it help the ranchers and the farmers be able to maintain land without having to try to develop it further, it also really increases the appreciation for the property that we have around here. It brings people here who are from the city who go, this is the most amazing place I've ever been, and I'd love to see that happen throughout the county. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Horowitz. Next is Rob Rossi, and on deck, I think it's Greg Betancourt. Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for allowing me to speak. I'm San Luis Obispo resident, Rob Rossi, and our family is one of the owners of the ranch and involved in various aspects of it, as you probably know. And I'm sorry that Carl Wittstrom couldn't be with us today, but he and his wife are on a family vacation. But this is really Carl's addition to the ranch, and he deserves a lot of credit for it because I think it has added a real quality to the already existing tours of the vineyards that were going on. Many of those were just conducted solely by vehicles, infrequently by horseback, and this is a component of about 3,000 feet in the middle of the tour. And I think, as some of the speakers have already mentioned, it's added to the experience, and we certainly found it to be attracting a lot of attention we didn't expect. And I think people are enjoying learning about the ranch and seeing it through the eyes of that experience. It is all constructed off of existing tour roads and ranch roads that have been used. The vineyard, as you know, was installed in 1999 by the Mondavis in conjunction with us. Today it's Ancient Peaks. We operate our own wine business, and both Mondavis previously and we since have conducted tours out there and hold special events. In fact, as North County Watch has referenced, the EIR for the development that is was previously approved, the existing conditions in that EIR note the ongoing tours and activities that the ranch still conducts and was conducting at that time. So I'm here to answer any questions now or later if any arise.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rossi. Okay, up next is Greg Betancourt, and on deck is Paul Reichert. Good morning.
Thank you, Commissioners. I appreciate the opportunity to address this. I'm one of the leaders of an organization, a volunteer organization called Central Coast Concerned Mountain Bikers, and one of the distinctions between me and most of the other mountain bikers here is I have this and some processes. And certainly you'll take those things into account. I want to emphasize to you that there is not enough public land in this county and not enough opportunity on public land in this county to meet the needs of the future in terms of outdoor recreation. We can talk about obesity, we can talk about all those other issues, but I can tell you from 25 years of experience that what we have is not enough in public lands for a variety of reasons that you probably are aware of as much as anybody else. And our opportunity, as I look down the road to the next 25 years or however long I can last, I'm looking at public lands I'm looking at private lands and the opportunities is on ag land. And my recommendation, we certainly support the staff's recommendation because that seems to be the most appropriate in terms of allowing a kind of expert discretion on each project. But my recommendation to you is that you keep in mind the needs of the future. And I think if you go with the staff's recommendation, you'll be doing that. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Betancourt. Next, Paul Reichert. And, Commissioner Murphy has a question.
Okay. I guess, can we ask questions of the public and the public comment period?
I prefer we just went all through it, but if you wish, if it's your own judgment on it.
It's what I was going to ask. Because of his experience in doing what he's done over the last 20, 25 years, my question is going to be what his experience of what permitting levels were required to build those types of facilities in the. And maybe that's something I can ask the staff.
Yeah, I think we could call someone back up during our discussion. Thank you, Commissioner Irving. That's a good thought. Okay, where were we? Mr. Rickard, I believe, and then on deck is Susan Harvey.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Paul Reichert, a Cambria resident and past president and board member of Camp Ocean Pines. I'm here to represent Camp Ocean Pines. Pleased to see that there was a reference to Camp Ocean Pines as option two, I believe, of the staff report. I apologize, I didn't get much time to prepare for this, but I think it's pretty straightforward direction that we're going. As a member of the board for 16 years, and as a little background of Camp Ocean Pines, we're a small camp, 13 acres. We are zoned rec, and I guess the emphasis that I want to make today is that it seems like there's a focus on a specific use or a specific facility, and I'd like this to be entertained in a more broad sense. Being zoned rec and having a camp that actually precedes use in policy in the county, we're sort of in an odd duck in that we don't really have a permit. We've tried to get permits by doing other things, but we are a camp, and I would consider that our primary use, and I would consider anything that we do as accessory to a certain degree. It's ironic that timing and last we've just prepared and completed a master plan future look for 5 to 15 years, and we've been talking to the county over the last several years about doing zip lines. We actually have a ropes course on low ropes course on property, but we've been looking at giant swings and zip lines and talking to county planners for a number of years about doing this. So it's a very inherent part of the discussion today in trying to make something happen and keep it clean. I'll keep it short and just, I guess the point that I want to make today is, as the previous speaker alluded to, there's very limited resource for offering this kind of opportunity for people in the community. Camp Ocean Pines is actively trying to provide that, and I'd be very, I guess I'd be sad to find out that this was overregulated. To me, I see a ropes course, or principally a zip line, as being something like a trail or a bike trail. It just happens to be in the air. So let's not try to overregulate these kinds of uses. Let's keep it, if at all, into a construction permit. I'd like there to be review to make sure that we don't have impacts, but I think we all can understand the needs for this kind of opportunity for the community and the community that we serve. Camp Ocean Pines serves blind kids, cancer kids, underprivileged kids, and we see this as an entertaining and educational opportunity, both scientifically and somewhat artistically, for the kids of the community. If I were to take a pick at this time with a little bit of reference that I've had, I think that option one probably fits our category the best. And please, let's keep restrictions and ordinances down on this opportunity. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Reichart. Next up, Susan Harvey, and on deck, John Beckia.
Good morning, and I went to just allowing zip lines per se without a permit. The county could be taking on a lot of liability from the standpoint of health and safety and a nuisance issue. But so somebody on Highway 101, some of that, you know, wonderful property that's up a hill, puts in a zip line. I mean, I can imagine you're coming down, you're heading towards the ocean. But it could also generate a lot of traffic if this became really popular. But you're not in a position to impose any conditions coming in or out of the entrance to that because it has no permit. And if there are, any kind of accident or something as a result of that, I mean, basically, the county's on notice now that that's, you know, you've created a public nuisance. The thing about the zip line on the current parcel, it's also in the approval, that parcel is supposed to come under Williamson Act. Zip lines would not be considered a secondary and incidental use under Williamson Act, so there's no way that could be allowed on that open space parcel. And the other thing, I included the amusement ride enforcement stuff, just so you get an idea of how seriously the state takes this, and that they did recognize Zip Rider as an amusement ride. We feel this is an amusement ride and should be regulated as an amusement ride. And I apologize, the actual permanent amusement ride statutes are 7920 to 7932. The first part is for temporary. And I know it was a lot of paper, and I'm thinking, I'm sorry. And then regarding mountain biking, Mr. Betancourt, right to my point, all of the work he did was on public lands, and I don't know how much national forest land there is in this county, but it seems to me that there's plenty without using up our ag lands, and there's a huge difference between ag land and rural lands for allowing this stuff. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Harvey. Next is John Beckia, and on deck is Zach Baxter.
Good morning, Planning Commission. Thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is John Beckia. I'm a president of SMART, Santa Margarita Area Residents Together, a community group that's been involved in the effort to protect and preserve the ranch over the past 25 years. This issue, to me, is one more example of how the present ranch owners consistently have tried to push the envelope of what's allowed under the general plan and what's allowed with the current land use ordinances. Like past occurrences of grading an airstrip that they said was historic use, laying tracks for a steam engine on what they said was existing ag land, did it all without permits, grading roads in the ag cluster parcel before the ag cluster was approved, again, claiming their existing roads, and holding a multitude of special events without use permits many times as well. So this zip line is just one more example of them always pushing the rules and the regulations. Not only is the zip line inconsistent with general plan and constructed on open space parcels, it also violates the current ZAG ag zoning use, since it's clearly not a secondary ag use. Now, it may be true that recreational uses are needed, but the proper way to do this is to not allow this before the land use ordinance is amended. It looks like county staff is doing this backwards. They want to permit this and then go and amend the land use ordinance later. It's astounding to me that county staff does this, that they look at what seems to be clear and what's allowed and not allowed, and they interpret it in such a way to allow this to go forward. So once again, we have property owners asking for exceptions to rules that other property owners in the county would have to follow. I would ask, if I were to construct a roller coaster ride on my rural residential property of 40 acres, would I be treated the same way? In spite of this, in spite of what we see over and over, the county not having the courage to enforce these rules, in spite of this, we ask that your planning commission show the courage and act properly. And whether the zip line is allowed or not, make it have it go about the proper, have them go through the proper procedures. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Becchia. Next up is Zach Baxter. This is the last speaker slip that I have, so if there is anyone else here who would like to speak at public comment, now's your last chance. Mr. Baxter.
Hi, I'm another way of making a living. But so I had another idea to construct a cable park on this property as an accessory. And the whole idea was, to have another use to make it better, make the property better. And I feel that I support the planning department's recommendation. I do have a slight concern for the option number 3 for the staff report, because it's going to require probably a conditional use permit, and that's probably a lot more expensive to apply for if you were going to construct a cable park, and that would not be ideal. Anyways, these uses are not very large impact on the property. They only take up a few acres, and I feel they're consistent with rural recreation on our property. Also, I show a concern for mountain bike or BMX on and the option 3. If you would include that into off-road vehicle uses, then that would essentially make BMX riding illegal on all ag lands, and rural lands are usually mountainous and not and have lots of trees in this area. So there's not a whole lot of money in that sort of business. So I can't imagine somebody in their right mind being able to construct one on rural lands. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Baxter. At this time, I will close public comment and declare this hearing in recess until 10:55 a.m. Call this meeting back to order. We have just completed public comment, and I can't help but notice the unusual demographics of the folks here today. Most of the time we see folks with gray hair or very little, like me, and it's a pleasure to welcome so many young people participating in our democratic process here. So, commissioners, really appreciate your participation today and the information that you provided. This particular hearing item affects every district in the county, and so there's usually we give the commissioner from the district where the project is being proposed the first opportunity to ask questions. So I think it's the chair's responsibility in this case to go first, and without objection from other commissioners. Okay, thank you.
I could object a little bit.
It would be an uprising.
Okay, so I do have quite a few questions, but I think I need to preface those because staff has chosen to combine consideration of legislative creation of amendments to ordinances, a legislative item, with consideration of a particular project or applicant. It's my personal opinion that ordinances apply generally, and they apply to all applicants in the future, all projects in the future, and they need to be not only applied fairly, but created fairly and objectively without influence from one particular project or another. So I just wanted everybody to understand how I was approaching this, so you don't read anything into my questions or comments that is not really intended, okay? So I hope that's clear.
Before you start, actually I wanted to speak to that issue specifically.
Okay.
The reason why you see recommendation number 4 on the front page was that we have currently a question in front of us that we were struggling with. But really, recommendation 4 is recommendation 1 or option 1. It is looking at the uses on a case-by-case basis and determining whether any of the uses are accessory. In this particular case, staff thought that this was a...
I think I need to first ask about our existing ordinances and what they have to say about the various uses, new uses that are in front of us that staff is having difficulty categorizing. Okay, and I guess as I was reading your staff report as well as the ordinances and the definitions, I looked up amusement park, which is one of our definitions in the ordinance, and it contained language about amusement rides and amusement devices. And I think you noted somewhere in your staff report, and there's also been comment here today about how the state considers some of these uses, for example, zips or bungees, as amusement rides. And so I guess my question is, why is that not clear enough in the context of our existing ordinances and industry and state categorization? Why is that not clear enough to decide where that fits in our table 2-2 and where it, and if it doesn't, where the use would not currently be allowed? I don't understand why that's not clear enough.
Chairman O'Grady, so perhaps we should first start with amusement park and amusement devices. As a part of our research, we started to look into when amusement parks and amusement devices are actually regulated. For example, for a specific device, and I'm going to forget the agency, I'm going to have to ask Cammie to remind me which state agency it was that regulates amusement park rides and devices. Currently, they only inspect devices that have a formal braking mechanism. And when we look at a lot of the uses that were presented today, they essentially slow down via gravity. Mm-hmm. So falling under that strict interpretation of what is an amusement device that's written in the regulation versus the practice of the state to inspect and review amusement rides and devices, when we looked at their uses before us, it didn't fit cleanly in that category. And then going back to the presentation, the staff presentation in the beginning, when we looked more broadly at what an amusement park involves and the associated uses such as retail sales, concessionaire, people that get that provide tickets to go on rides, it's open to the public, as opposed to some of the uses that were presented today, which are prearranged for the most part, associated with a tour or some other type of organizational group activity. When we looked at the existing definitions, it doesn't seem to fit nicely into outdoor sports and recreation, or being defined in the rural recreation category. However, when we looked at the uses, the nature of the intensity and the type of uses, the fact that they are associated for the most part with an organization or a tour and bringing that group to a rural setting as opposed to coming to a front gate of an amusement park, that's why we looked at that definition and leaned the staff recommendation in the direction that we went. So perhaps that's a first introductory statement that we can get more into some of the details of responding to your questions.
Yeah, I did also note that even the folks that the businesses that provide zip lines, for example, refer to them, in other words, the concessionaires, they refer to what they're providing as a ride, an amusement ride. So, okay, I didn't know whether that factored into your analyses of whether or not this fit the definition of amusement park and ride and device or not. Okay, anyway, you could see where that was a major concern of mine, starting from the ordinances we have in place now, and what do we do? Okay. I think one of the public commenters mentioned liability, and that was also one of my questions. We're county officials, and we have to be concerned about the liability to the county, so perhaps county council could talk about...
Or a certain land use category. So I believe that the safety concerns, you know, would be addressed through that type of permit review to the extent that we are essentially allowed to or given essentially jurisdiction over those kinds of concerns.
Okay. The other thing that alerted me to the seriousness of this was that as I read online about some of the concessionaires that provide these various... I'll say rides, bungee jumping, or zip lines, was they asked the participants to sign a waiver of liability. And so immediately a flag went up for me. Does that waiver absolve the county as well as the concessionaire or the property owner on which the event is taking place? Would that be helpful? Is that something that the commission can require as part of the permit process to require a liability waiver, as apparently these concessionaires routinely do?
I think it would depend on it would depend on the advice that you would like to give to the board in terms of how we are going to structure an ordinance amendment, if that's what your commission decides to do. It's a little unclear what the county's ability would be in terms of requiring a person to sign a waiver. I think those waivers are probably pretty standard in the business because it essentially would probably, you know, make explicit the assumed risk doctrine, which basically says if you know it's dangerous, you're undertaking the risks involved with doing that dangerous activity. Now, the county's role in making sure that either that liability is established as against any particular entity isn't clear to me that we'd be able to do that or not at this point.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, also, you know, this would be the individual operator's responsibility to carry the proper insurance to protect themselves. But signing of a release is pretty standard. I sign one every time I take a Zumba class, which is just a dance class. So, you know, certainly requiring individuals to use these to sign liability waivers just to do the zip lining or the cable ski lake or whatever it is fairly standard practice across the board for anything now that we have become such a litigious society.
Yeah, that hadn't been my experience taking my children to carnivals and to amusement parks.
But an amusement park carries insurance, so for the whole of the amusement park and all of the rides.
Okay.
Not to say that you don't see amusement parks being sued when folks are injured on rides.
Okay. The thrust of my questions is to identify what those things are or may be that will minimize the liability to the county. So that was the point of my questions. If there's anything we can do or identify, then perhaps we should do it. The other question I have is, where do these amusements cross the line into events? In fact, again, from my research, these rides are often promoted by event production companies, and I don't know how to make that distinction or tell that difference as to when any of these proposed activities might be subject to our events ordinance.
I think when they are events, that's very clear. So if I'm having a downhill mountain bike race, that's an event and is subject to the temporary events ordinance. A mountain biking trail that's a multi-use trail on public lands is not subject to any of this. Those are allowed and currently allowed and not a problem. What we're asking you about specifically are the race courses, for example, and those are almost always or always associated with events. Currently, our temporary event ordinance would allow them if they're done associated with a nonprofit. The problem is that the event ordinance has been interpreted by the Board of Supervisors to not allow any grading, as we define grading, so moving more than 50 cubic yards, et cetera. And oftentimes when they set these courses up, although it's done all with handwork, it does move more than 50 cubic yards total over the whole of the course. So currently they couldn't come in under our temporary events ordinance because we don't have a place to land them as a use. And then they...
So as opposed to splitting it off and itemizing it and tying it to events, the preference here would be to establish what the definition is for each of these uses and set up a permit level for each of them. By setting up the permit level, that would essentially be the prerequisite that we would look at for those individual uses. Of many of the uses that we heard today as a part of public testimony, many of those seem to be ones that would be operated on a regular basis by operators, which would have either a building permit to construct the structures for the associated use and or the possibility of a discretionary permit that would go along with it. So even though they could be associated with an event, the main focus is we need to define these uses and then associate what is the appropriate permit level with them, which would then be the prerequisite for them to do business.
Okay. I understand what you're saying, then the events ordinance might also apply depending upon the situation after these ordinances have been crafted.
Depending on how the ordinances are set up. So, for instance, using your example of a bungee facility,
right.
Perhaps that is the primary use of the site. It is available, and we would set up a permit level of some kind for that and standards to establish it. So it really depends on the use and what is determined to be the appropriate permit level and what's determined to be appropriate standards, if any, that should be applied to those individual uses, just like any other use.
Even if it's a temporary use?
Even if it's a temporary use, if that's the way it's ultimately defined.
Okay. Let's see.
Perhaps Chairman O'Grady, as you're going through your questions, just one other point that we could elaborate on is, since we were focusing on what's the appropriate definition of permit level, in the event that a discretionary permit came through, there would be the ability to define how many occurrences a year, hours of operation, and be able to identify those requirements up front, as opposed to having a permit that just is ongoing, that covers the construction associated with putting together, say, a course that then would perhaps make a somewhat messy discussion on events. So the idea is that the better we can nail down what the definition and the permit requirements are through this interpretation, I think is advantageous.
But would that opportunity exist if these uses were deemed accessory uses?
In many ways, yes, because an individual would come in and would need a business license, which requires a zoning clearance, and we would base issuing that zoning clearance on their project description. So we would include, as part of the issuance of the zoning clearance, the very specifics that they provided us to justify the use as an accessory use. For instance, hours of operation, or that they're only going to be guided tours, or docent-led, or only available on the weekends, whatever their project description was that led us to the call that they were, in fact, accessory.
Okay, since you brought up business licenses and zoning clearances, I do need to then address Santa Margarita, but only as an example. As I look at the attachments on page 3-13 and 15, business license and zoning clearance were issued for an approved use called agrotourism. And I looked, in the ordinances to see if I could find a definition of agrotourism, and I couldn't find it. So I know your staff report said that the zoning clearance hadn't contemplated zip lines when that was issued, but I wondered what y'all did contemplate, since maybe you do have a definition for agrotourism.
There is no current definition for agrotourism. In this case, we associated that with the vineyard tours or ranch tours, which are very common.
Right. Okay. So that's...
But this is a good example. So, for instance, we did have a place for zip lines to land, and it was clear to the planner who issued the zoning clearance. They would have put in ziplining by appointment only, limited to, you know, whatever it was that the applicant told us at the time.
Right. Okay. Let's see. Accessory use if they're not customarily a part of primary use.
I think each individual use would have to have that determination made. Perhaps a giant swing could not be determined to be accessory to an ag use, but it surely could be determined to be accessory to a recreational camp. So I think it depends on the individual. That's why it needs to be a case-by-case determination consistent with the Ag and Open Space policy about recreation uses.
And who would make those case-by-case determinations?
That would be made by the project manager, the project planner, who is issuing either the zoning clearance.
So county staff. But that would not come to the commission or the board of supervisors?
No, it would not come to the commission or board of supervisors.
Okay. Oh, well, there could be appeal rights. So, I mean, and so that would be the way it could come before us or the board. Is that correct?
How would you know to appeal?
Well, there's, I mean, the process is outlined
it's technically a director's decision, and all decisions of the planning director can be appealed. In the case of a zoning clearance, it's a ministerial action, so you would have to actually appeal it based on the fact that it was not allowed.
Okay, but it is appealable.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anything that the director makes a decision on is appealable.
Okay. Commissioner Murphy, you have a related question.
Yeah, just on this accessory use issue, because I'm not real clear on that. If on our table 2-2 here, sand or recreation camping, we've got camping incidental, site plan required under ag land use. That would be a permitted use, not an accessory use. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's specifically defined. There's a permit level set, and there's a set of standards associated with that particularly defined use. And that was what I was trying to explain as part of my presentation. The issue that we had is that even though those definitions had language in them that seemed to be just describing these other uses as examples, so the words such as in the rural recreation and camping use, when we went and looked in our ordinance, there were only permit levels and standards established for those uses that were listed in that definition. It, you know, probably was an oversight. It may have been the way our ordinance was originally written in 1980 that led to that. But that was really where we started to question what was going on. Here you had a definition that seemed to just list these as examples, and yet when we went and looked in the ordinance, there was nothing specific other than those examples.
But they're not accessory uses.
They are not accessory uses.
Could you expand a little more on the concept of accessory use? I don't know if I clearly understand what an accessory use is. Is it typically only apply in ag-type land uses?
No, you can have residential accessory uses, like a swimming pool. Anything that is secondary to the primary use of the site, but that is traditionally associated with that use, or customarily associated with that use, we consider an accessory.
So could there be cases where the accessory use requires no permitting, no contact with the county, it's just an allowable accessory use?
There are uses like that would only require a building permit.
But there would at least require a building permit.
Most uses will trigger a building permit. It's rare that you get something that doesn't, but there are times when no building permit would be triggered either.
So it's something that wouldn't fall under the traditional use under that land use category. It's something secondary to that typical use, say, of an ag parcel for farming. It's something that's secondary to that.
Right.
But our definition actually does talk about being secondary, incidental. I'd read it yesterday, but somehow related to the primary use. Is that right?
Yeah, it says that an accessory use is a use accessory to any principal use and customarily a part thereof, which is clearly incidental and secondary to the principal use and does not change the character of the principal use.
And then so if we've got a rural recreation and camping usage allowed under ag, is that considered a primary use of ag land then, or is that, since it's permitted?
Actually, organizational camps could be a primary use of land that is rural recreation and camping allowed in ag. So you can establish an organizational camp, so like a Boy Scout camp, in agriculture as a primary use. You wouldn't have to have existing agricultural use on the site to establish that. But incidental camping, which is another definition, which is described, it's limited in numbers and you can't have any services, that is more like an accessory use.
But under the, say, let's take hunting and fishing club site plan required under ag land use. Is that considered primary standard, Article 3.
Right, it'll be in 22.30.
To where that specific type of use would have to be accessory or something.
Right.
In other cases, it may not be. It may be a.
It may not be.
Okay. Thank you.
The staff report is asking this commission to make decisions about how to treat these various new uses about which staff is puzzled as to how to do so, and that's why you're here, to ask for our input on that. But I'm equally puzzled. I mean, like this giant swing, I had never heard of one, I've never seen one, and I feel ill-equipped to make any decisions about one.
I rode one at Magic Mountain.
Well, I guess it turned out okay. You didn't. Okay. You didn't fall off or whatever. Okay. But absent a staff report that contains analyses of what these uses, rides, whatever are, and reports from county departments such as agriculture about impacts of each of these various rides or proposed uses, but what those impacts might be on ag land, so that then I would feel informed enough to make an intelligent and reasonably intelligent decision about what you're asking us to do at this time. And so I guess I have to ask the question, if you all couldn't decide, how are we to decide without that additional information that I just mentioned?
Chairman O'Grady, when we look at the existing ordinance, it's clear to us that it's unclear. However, when we look at where we stand as far as the staff's recommendation, we do have a recommendation which I think is clear, which is for uses that are more minor in nature, given some of the examples we've talked about today, staff is of the opinion that there can be a case-by-case review done at the staff level to determine whether or not they are accessory or not. The second part of our recommendation, however, looks at a broader suite of land uses, and from our perspective, those definitions need to be added to the land use ordinance, and so as a part of that recommendation, we were in fact recommending that the land use ordinance be amended to accommodate these emerging uses. To then leap forward under the hypothetical that recommendation was pursued, what then would happen is the more involved staff analysis that would go along with setting performance standards, requirements for the permit, which we would take through the traditional general plan amendment land use ordinance procedure, at which time we would send it out to stakeholder groups and our referral agencies as well as other county departments to participate in. However, we're a little earlier in the process, and what we're asking for direction on today is how initially should we interpret the use? Is it adequately covered by the existing land use ordinance, or does it need to be revised, or is there a hybrid of those two actions?
Okay, I think other commissioners, we need to hear from other commissioners now. And so Commissioner Topping, you have your light on, so please proceed.
Well, this is not a typical ordinance amendment interpretation. In my view, this is all about having fun. And isn't that right? I mean, basically, people come here to have fun in our county, in the rural areas, and elsewhere. So I told myself that I wasn't going to get grouchy about this complexities. I was going to have fun with this. So I'm going to try to follow that line of thinking. But first, I want to ask a procedural question, and that is, where is the resolution?
The resolution follows your action today. So when you make a decision and are specific in your motion, then that would be shown in a resolution that was ultimately prepared by the clerk that reflected your specific action.
So do we have the resolution in front of us when we act?
No.
No?
We
write it.
You need to write it because...
It on the fly.
We've given you our recommendation.
It could take a little bit of time depending on how complex that recommendation is, but that's basically what would happen.
Well, that was at the heart of my concern because basically these uses are all over the place, just shown as judged by the pictures that were shown by staff. And so I mentioned Magic Mountain jokingly, but that actually is my experience and my family's experience at Magic Mountain with very large posts holding up these swings that go back and forth. Now, the posts are maybe, 50, 100 feet in the air. And so that's a structure. And so we're talking about structures with some of these uses. And you're talking about structures with zip lines. And I note that it mentions that a building permit is needed for the one that we know about in the county on Santa Margarita Ranch. So I'm thinking to myself, and we had a zip line in our backyard where we had a little fort and our sons could ride the zip line down and fall into the pool. And that was, they're in their 50s now, and so zip lines have been around for a while, and I did it myself, so it's fun. I guess my point is, I kind of agree with the chair that we really need to know more about some of these uses to be able to say which way we want to direct them, whether they're just an oh-by-the-way use or whether they're actually a something that really needs permitting. Let me give you some questions about zip lines. How high off the ground can they be? How fast can they go? How well connected are people to the zip lines? It's not the kind that you just hang on to, right? It's you're in a harness. Okay. Are helmets required? Are there national standards? And are there any that are available on public parklands presently in the county or within the Central Coast region? So those are some of my questions. And oh, by the way, do they require insurance by the provider?
Well, again, as County Council told you, there are some of these things that are regulated by the state. A zip line can be as high or as low off the ground as an operator wants to make it. You are typically hooked in with a harness on the bigger zip lines, like the ones that are currently operating. The owner of the property would carry the insurance, and I actually think there are state regulations that folks carry insurance for that. And I can't remember your last one.
It was public lands.
Oh, actually, there are temporary zip lines that are set up as part of adventure racing that's done in our county parks. I believe Santa Margarita Park for certain, and maybe even Lopez when they do their adventure racing. But they're temporary. They're not permanent.
Commissioner Topping, you brought up one thing. If I could interject, I was thinking about height limits. I believe there are height limits on various uses, and I wondered if these proposed uses would have to comply. In other words, if there's a 35-foot height limit on ag, would any of these uses, if they took place on ag land, have to comply?
If they're deemed to be a structure as defined in our ordinance, then they would be subject to the setbacks and height limits.
Okay. Bless you. Commissioner Topping?
I'll pass for now.
Okay.
I got more.
Okay,
but,
Commissioner Christensen.
I want others to have a turn.
Okay.
Thank you. Well, I'll be different from our first speaker. I'll tell you right now, I am very much in favor of all these things. I think they're a great idea. But I do differ from a lot of the speakers in that I agree with staff that the issue right now is not this particular zip line and or a particular mountain bike idea or any of the BMX cross. We really are trying to do this on a global level, and then whatever the specifics are will fall after, into place after we figure out our global approach. And that's really what the idea of this whole hearing is, I think, is to globally figure out what the heck we're doing, and then we'll get to the specifics either sooner or later, depending on what we decide globally. And so I wanted to say that I do agree with staff in the sense that I agree that we should be looking at the rural recreation and camping section as opposed to outdoor sports and recreational facilities. I was tempted at first to go to outdoor sports and recreational facilities, but I agree that with our public and with kind of the obvious that if you put it, all kinds of different requirements. So that's where I stopped. I got stuck. And I have three questions first. First of all, I really want to know, I mean, what we're really concerned about here, we are concerned about things like rural lands and the other one, rural residential,
rural
lands, okay. So we are concerned about those areas. Certainly if you had a 50-foot tall tower next to you, you're concerned about it. But I think one of the real concerns from our public as well as from our commission is when these things might be located on ag land. So I want to know does the ag department weigh in on this? We don't see anybody here. There's a policy that allows recreational use. I just didn't know.
There is a policy that allows recreational use. And I can kind of get to where you got stuck and answer that question at the same time. And what we're asking for you to do today is to say whether or not you think these uses might be equivalent to something that already exists or not, or where they belong. And that if you go along with staff's recommendation, it's that we think they need to be added into the definition of rural recreation and camping. We think that that permit levels need to be established and then certain standards where appropriate. So we're not asking you today to determine whether or not such and such is a minor use permit and something else is a conditional use permit. We're just saying in general.
Well, I guess, yeah, I understand that part, and I'm definitely in agreement with you on.
So when we go and determine those permit levels, that's when we would bring in the Ag Department to figure out which of these things may or may not be appropriate in the agriculture land use category. Or similar to incidental camping that requires that you have a primary agricultural use, are there any of these uses that also should have standards written like that?
Right, and I agree with you. I mean, I guess I've gone farther than that before I got stuck. I agree that they do need to, they are not equivalent. They're not just something we can just say, okay, it's not option one, and it's not option two. And it's either option three or it's option four. And when you talk about them being equivalent to a use already identified, well, they're not. I mean, they're not equivalent in the way in that what they are. I mean, they're not. I mean, how can you? But are they equivalent in terms of either? To my way of looking at what equivalency is, do they need a MUP, a site plan, or a CUP? That's the kind of equivalency I was talking about. Talking about whether they're actual equivalent activities, they fit better under outdoor sports and recreational activities in terms of equivalency, in terms of what they are: fun, amusement kind of thingies, or educational thingies, and or both. But well, to me, that just takes you right out of the whole discussion. That's not really where we're at. So they need to go in rural recreation camping, but camping and those kinds of things, dude ranches, health resorts, fishing clubs, sports shooting facilities, they're only equivalent in the sense that you had mentioned in your staff report, that they are things that you, at least as described by the current examples we have, they are, you know, they're specific activities. They're not like, okay, it isn't Magic Mountain. They don't just sit there on the side of the road and you can go. But they could. But so, you know, when you say equivalent, I'm going, okay, do I want to say they're equivalent to
a dude ranch, and so that means they require a cup. Do I want to say they're equivalent to camping incidental, 10 or fewer units, so they only require a site plan? Do I want to say they're equivalent to camping incidental, so they only require a MUP? Do I want to say they're equivalent to organizational camping, which doesn't even go into ag land? No, that's not a question. I mean, I can't answer that question. They are not equivalent to anything.
So
I'm going towards option three, I guess, is what I'm
saying. So the ordinance describes equivalent, and it says nature and intensity. It doesn't say equivalent, look at the permit level. So if your planning commission, a majority of your planning commission, says, hey, we can't make an equivalency to any of these uses that exist, then it looks like you are heading more toward what staff is recommending, in that we also could not say that it was equivalent to any of those easily. Different from our llama example, that we could make
right.
the case that a llama was the same as a, I don't remember what we
Well, made. And you could make it if you know, this your discussion in your staff report talking about option one, it talked about interpret zip lines to be accessory uses based on size and scale. Yes, if we had an idea based on size and scale what all of these uses are, we could make an equivalent. But as we've had pointed out by everybody and by common sense, size and scale is kind of like the key issue here. I mean, one little zip line on Santa Margarita Ranch, I don't know if it's little or not, but that could be a very, very minor. The same exact structure on some small thing could be very major. Is an accessory use to a 500-acre equestrian farm doesn't mean that I wouldn't want to have a condition on it saying, hey, don't put it right next to the freeway, or you can't put it next to your neighbor, or all the other conditions you might want to put on it. So the accessory and primary thing makes no sense to me whatsoever.
So what I hear you saying is that you would want the board to direct staff to do amendments to our ordinance that would add these uses into the definition and in every case establish a permit level and standards for their establishment.
Yes.
Wait a minute. That's going too far.
That's where I got stuck. That's exactly it. Because
option
I don't really want to
yes.
have.
Not every case.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you got size and scale and you got
size and scale
context, those two things, then you've got some frame of reference.
I don't want to have somebody
where
have
the counter can make a decision. Yeah. On behalf of
I don't want to have somebody have to go through a cup to stick one of these. I've seen, the fair brings the bungee jumping people to pull a crane onto a thing and stick it up there and have it be part of whatever it is they're doing when they've got some, I just.
But remember, a permit level isn't always a conditional use permit. A permit level can be a zoning clearance and business license. It can be a site plan. It can be a minor use permit. So
what I'm saying, in one situation, you might need one kind of condition.
Yep.
You might need one kind of permit. Another situation, you might want a different kind of permit.
That would be what would be developed during the amendments. We're not asking you to say what that permit level is at this time. We're just saying,
yes.
do you think
well, that's
there
what you
ought
just said earlier, so that's why we all freaked out.
Do you think there ought to be a permit level? So what I'm hearing from you is that in every case there ought to be a permit level and standards. What that permit level
right.
is, we don't know right now.
Yes.
And
I would say that
would be part of
yes.
the process of developing that.
Keeping in mind
amendment.
That, yes, a permit level being
could be
very minor,
absolutely.
Or it could be a full thing. Yeah, I
absolutely.
Guess you could. There you go. You've gotten me.
Okay.
Okay, Commissioner. Commissioner Topping.
Sounds like.
I do believe I focused the discussion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Commissioner.
Poor Commissioner Irving has not had a chance to say a thing, and I
thank you.
I bow to his his anxiety.
I have the same concerns that Commissioner Christensen just expressed, but mine goes back to this. It sounds like staff recommends option one, but really what staff is saying is option four. You want a cleanup amendment, if I'm. Hearing what I'm they say I don't understand the difference maybe between option three and option four, but before we get there, go back to this whole idea of a case by case approval or review. How can that be done by a staff person without setting very specific rules, regulations, size and scale, and things of that sort? That goes back to my initial question of, gee,
How do you have any consistency when somebody comes to the staff and says, I want to do a giant swing on my property that's right next to a public road, or I want to do a giant swing on my 20,000-acre ranch where they can only get there by a tour? How does the staff have the ability, without our setting the rules, to make those determinations?
Because they would use the existing rules in the ordinance. So we do have a definition of what an accessory use is, and they would look at what was being requested to determine if it met that definition of what an accessory is.
So then we come back to the question of how do you define accessory? The chair indicated that his reading of it, that accessory had to be
customarily a part thereof.
Customarily a part thereof. So how does a zip line become part of a cattle operation? How do you read that?
Well, if it's being presented as I'm offering this zip line to tour the cattle operation, okay. similar to okay.
So it's offering a trail.
And
how do we spin the application is what you're saying?
It would have to be how it was presented. And then if it passed we call it the smell test. I mean, there's not... Okay. There's not a nice way of saying that, but using the existing zipline operation as an example, it's part of a 2.5-hour ranch tour. It's probably 8 minutes of a 2.5-hour ranch tour that includes wine tasting and other things. So in that case, perhaps it could be determined to be accessory.
Well, since you brought up that, North County Watch has indicated some specific objections to Margarita Adventures, or some questions about it, and you've already said we're not here to discuss that, but there is a question point that they make, which is that they say that staff, or can they be cleaned up? You have a license, the clearance that's been given to Margarita Adventures. If we subsequently determine that there's some rules of operation that need to be there, it doesn't apply to them. Is that correct?
I'm going to allow County Council to answer that.
Thank you. It is true that if we were to give an existing use a permit on any level, they would essentially become – that use would be grandfathered. So if we were to later on decide that we wanted to establish certain standards that maybe that existing use didn't quite meet, we wouldn't be able to bring them back in and have them change their project.
By the granting of the business license, did that not, in effect, do that already?
That's an interesting issue, and it's specific to the business license application and how broadly we want to or can read the information put in the application. What exactly did we know? How broad was our zoning clearance, essentially? And it's a little difficult because this isn't we're not at a point of determining that specific usage.
Right. So they have not been grandfathered in yet, maybe, depending on whether you define agrotourism.
Correct. I think that there's a good argument for saying that they would not be grandfathered in at this point in time.
So does agritourism need to be brought into this as discussion as something that needs defining within the LUO?
Chairman O'Grady, Commissioner Irving, if that's something that the commission would like us to include as a part of the definitions, we'd be happy to look at it. One thing that I want to do, though, is it seems like we're getting, at least as far as the deliberation, a little bit further down the road as far as what the commission would like to see as far as analysis and guidelines. I think where we are, and I've said this a couple times this morning, is we're a little earlier in the process. We're at a point where we're hearing loud and clear from the commission that this is not a use that is equivalent to any of the named uses under rural recreation. However, it appears that most of the suite of uses, with the exception of BMX courses, seem to be logical to fall under the rural recreational category. That being said, it also is apparent to us that
you want to have more analysis and feedback and guidelines and standards for what would be appropriate for each of these uses. That would be something that would happen once the wheels start turning on actually doing a full-blown general plan and ordinance amendment. We're just not there yet. So what we're asking the commission for today is, which direction would you like us to start going and setting this as a, and then we'll be talking to the board about where we set this as a priority. When staff first looked at it, we thought that there was possibly an opportunity to segment off a portion of the uses, which could be considered to possibly be accessory, but based on what we're hearing from your deliberation now, it seems that that analysis needs to be wound into the entire package of a ordinance amendment. So at a time later in the future, we'll be coming back with, if it's prioritized to move forward with this as a part of the department's priorities, to move forward with a general plan amendment and an ordinance with specific standards, with definitions of the uses, with information about setbacks and other requirements, and there'll also be an opportunity for the public as well as referral agencies to provide their input on the appropriateness and level of intensity of these uses on rural recreational lands or rural lands as well as ag lands.
Okay.
So we just don't have all the answers to the question.
I see some of these activities as being I could approve under option one today. Immediately, that are relatively low impact. The mountain bike riding, for instance, the zip line to me is not a big deal. Giant swings, I don't get that. A cable lake to me is, you know, that's a commercial activity. So I don't understand those, and I don't know. I don't want to just sort of wrap these all together and put them under your option one, but I'd like to break them apart if that would help facilitate the process, because I don't know how long an LUO amendment is going to take. I don't want to tie people's hands here if there's an option for them to establish one of these uses and it can define it or can present it to you as an accessory use that would be beneficial. I don't want to hold that process up, but certain of these things to me stand out really clearly is that they're just not. They really need to be looked at really closely.
Structural steel beams planted in the ground with engineered anchors and supports. And that sounds like a building permit to me. So maybe you might want to be thinking in terms of a size, a height, and distance. 3,000 lineal feet collectively doesn't mean 3,000 one long zip line, as I understand it. It's like four different zip lines in this particular case. You may want to start thinking sooner rather than later about how you want to handle zip lines on some interim basis, since the issue is not going to go away. There are people interested here in the room that want to do this. But I would favor option three, which is an ordinance and general plan amendment, which basically addresses the broad range of uses.
Did you have anything else, Commissioner Tappe?
I think in approaching this, you might want to be thinking about the variations that Commissioner Irving, I think, aptly identified. The giant swings, in my view, do fall into the amusement ride category, whereas some of the other activities you're talking about don't. And we're in a kind of a catch-22 here. We can't do that today as to which is which, but you have the expertise to, as a staff, to be able to say what you think about size and scale and context for these uses. And having been involved on the staff side of the planning business, I know that one more thing is not something that staff necessarily, I mean, it's an additional burden to ask the board to direct you to put this into your to-do list, but I just feel like it needs some careful thought.
After we hear from Commissioner Murphy, perhaps we can consider some of these items and maybe take some straw votes and maybe narrow down the range of alternatives. So, Commissioner Murphy, you're up next.
And Ms. Warning, on our, is it possible, I agree, I think this falls under rural recreation and camping as far as a use, and it's allowed in the ag zones. Is it possible to have a permitting requirement that's variable, so to speak, that maybe I saw one in here under a different type of use where it required a site plan unless a minor use permit was required under the specific use standards in Article, I think it is 2 or 3. So is it possible, because like, that's what we're trying to get at. I don't know that we can have a classification for every possible item. You know, have 6 new items to cover swings and zip lines and everything that comes up and have its own separate category. If we had one category, you know, called rural recreation or whatever, is it possible to have variations where staff makes a determination what level of permitting they think is required, which would be appealable by the applicant, or do we have to nail it down pretty specifically?
As a part of the LUO amendment process, we could integrate different tiers of intensity with the uses, meaning that if there was a more intense version of one of the uses, maybe a longer course versus a shorter course, that could have different permit levels. For example, if it's really intense, you could have a major use permit, and say if it's less intense, it may perhaps only require a site plan. So we could build that in, and then based on Commissioner Irving's earlier comments, when you look at the suite of uses, there's some that we could categorize, and he mentioned zip lines and mountain biking as less intense than what I'm hearing related to the giant swing. So at least from a general higher level approach, we would be looking at lower permit levels or for the prior uses, and higher intensity uses would require a higher permit level. That's at least what I'm hearing from the direction from the commission.
And that's kind of what I'm getting at. I don't know if I can see where that's being done in any other land use currently, but that I think is what we're trying to get to, because I don't know how we're going to spell out every specific possible use under any of these categories or land uses and have a permitting requirement for every use. So I think we need a broad category and have discretion starting at the staff level, then coming up to the commission.
Camping is a use definition, and it has included in that definition a number of things listed as examples.
I guess what I'm saying,
perhaps I can help the commission along.
Well, let me follow up. I'm looking at the actual table here where it takes the definitions, the such as, and turns them into actual items on a line.
Right.
I'm saying maybe one of those lines needs, maybe says other recreational or rural recreational uses is what I'm getting at. Because there is no, on the line that says rural recreation, there are no permitting requirements. It has subcategories below that.
That's correct.
So
that would
create a subcategory that would cover a group of uses such as this, as opposed to creating 5 or 6 new lines.
That's
my thought.
That's a potential to, as part of the amendment that could be looked at. If the clerk can put up the, I hope that's readable on your screens. This is what I'm hearing the commission going towards, and that's to use the rural recreation and camping land use definition for certain uses, including other active rural recreation uses, by amending Article 8 to include these uses into that definition, into the definition of rural recreation and camping. I hear that there's 2 specific uses that don't necessarily belong in rural recreation and camping, and that's bicycle motocross, that you perhaps agree with staff that it belongs in off-road vehicle courses, and that you feel perhaps giant swings don't belong in rural recreation and camping, but instead belong in outdoor sports and recreation. So that's the first part of it. That would be saying we need an amendment to do that. The second part would be then to include also in that amendment permit requirements for where these uses are not accessory to a primary use of the site. And this is what I heard Commissioner Irving said, that he still feels that there are certain types of these uses or certain ways that they could be developed where they would be accessory. So that would be evaluated on a case-by-case basis to determine if they're accessory. Where they're not accessory, then they wouldn't be allowable until you did the amendments that established the permit levels. And the last is to evaluate where you might need special standards like setbacks or height restrictions and develop those again as part of this amendment. So to me, the question really is this number two. Is there a majority of the commission that agrees that they any of these uses or other active rural recreation uses that we haven't thought of, since I certainly didn't know about giant swings, could be developed in such a way that they are accessory and therefore not subject to specific permit level or other standards?
Yeah, we can take a straw vote on that. Are commissioners prepared to do that at this time, or would you like to have more discussion about accessory uses?
It's two. I mean, accessory to ag use or accessory to any use. Obviously, they could be.
It could be accessory to the primary use of the site, whatever that primary use of the site.
If the primary site was an amusement park, it could be.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not really comfortable with this idea that the accessory use. I understand the idea of Mr. Irving of not necessarily requiring a whole burden of permitting, but on things. But again. I mean, 3,000 feet of line or 50-foot tower, well, I guess we're going to put giant swings in outdoor sports, which I don't really care about, but that's the part. I know that that's where staff wants us to go, and I am, as we know with our usual ag land discussion about events, that whole thing ends up being a very, very movable line, depending on how it's, who's listening and how it's presented, and that really bothers me.
I think we do need to proceed cautiously with these new things. As we gain experience with some of these, there may come a time where we can see that certain of these may be considered confidently to be accessory uses, and the ordinances can be amended at that time. So I do not support at this time, with the level of information that we have, any accessory uses.
You're talking about kind of this specific situation. I think the staff should make the initial call whether it's accessory or not, and if the applicant disagrees, they can appeal that decision to the commission.
Well,
we can decide if it's accessory
it
or not.
It says right here, table 2+2 to add permit requirement for these uses. And they can, when they are determining permit requirements for these uses, they can talk about accessory or not accessory, however they want to do it at that time and level, scope and scale and everything. It's not, I'm not saying don't introduce that concept. I'm saying just don't put it in terms right there in this motion about accessory or not accessory. The other thing I want to make sure is I really like the idea that we look at ag lands a little more carefully. So that would be one of the directions I'd like to give, is that.
We're giving a recommendation
to the board.
No, I don't want to put that in there.
And well, okay, we hear from you already, but there's others. Let's finish number one, okay? Tentatively use the rural recreation and camping land use definitions for all of these uses that you have down there by amending the land use ordinance article 8 to add these uses in the definition of rural recreation and camping.
It wouldn't be tentative once article 8 was amended. That would be what the requirement would be.
We're saying use this rural recreation and camping land use definition. We're not saying tentatively use it. We're saying use it.
Then wait, please.
Go ahead. Is there
please,
two steps
I'm not
there?
Finished.
Go ahead.
Pending a detailed staff report on each use as discussed. In other words, commissioners have expressed levels of uncertainty that it's right to put all of these things in rural recreation and camping on all of the use groups, like ag, like rural lands, and so I think to we're trying to communicate the sense of the commission, which is pretty tentative right now, I would say, about how this should end up. What's the best way for it to end up? And so I want to communicate this level of uncertainty to the board so that they can take that into consideration in deciding whatever it is they're going to decide. And as Director Giffen explained, the second part of this effort would be to provide the commission with the details on impacts on the land, reports from the Ag Department, recommended permitting requirements by staff, so that we could either look at this and say, yep, that what we thought was right, or, oh, my God, we really didn't think about this, and we need to take that out of rural recreation and camping, and it really belongs somewhere else, or something that we might be taking out needs to go back in. So that was how I tried to reflect all commissioners' somewhat differing concerns about how to move forward. So what's our
timing here? If we take no action today in regards to Santa Margarita Ranch, they have a zoning clearance and a business license. Are they, in theory, free to continue subject to somebody coming back and challenging that business license and that the application maybe was inadequate or lacked description?
Commissioner Murphy, I think that's a separate consideration that we should come to.
Well, I'm saying because you're talking about a tentative action, I'm thinking, why don't we take the time to do a final action even if it's something we don't do today? Do we have to take action today is what I'm asking. Is there an urgency that we come up with the final
decision? We're being asked, you guys, is just do we want to use rural recreation and camping for these things? And won't we basically think yes? I think
maybe.
We basically think yes. I mean, where we're putting our maybe is more on the level of permitting and on the size and scale issues and on things like whether it's on ag land and everything. But I think in general what I've heard is that people were basically pretty comfortable with using rural recreation and camping as opposed to one of the other types of our headings, you know, as opposed to outdoor sports or some other current use listed. So that's where we're at. And we need to make a decision because the staff is asked us for it. So we got to make a decision. Let's make it.
I think staff has adequately captured my feelings about the matter on 1 and 2.
I did add language to number 1 to acknowledge that during the amendment process any of these uses might be recommended to be added to another land use definition.
And any land amendment process comes back through to us. That's how it works.
Yes.
Cammie, as I read your amended number 2, the last sentence other rural recreation uses would not be permitted. So everything that was in number 1 would be could be evaluated. Is that?
No, that's all.
Are you saying? Explain maybe a little bit more about number 2 then.
If you take number 2 with the strikeouts, then really none of these uses could happen until after land use ordinance amendments have been completed.
Thank you. And I like the last sentence for number 1.
Yeah.
Case to process an ordinance amendment.
See, that's where I got stuck.
Would you support the strikeouts? Because the board could end up putting this at the back of your pile. I remember seeing that page at our...
Yes, you have seen our priority list.
Your priority list.
It's
huge.
It's quite long.
And I think staff should have the ability to evaluate this on a case-by-case basis until such time as the land use ordinances are prepared. So I would support number 2 with the strikeouts reinstated.
Well, does it require reinstating those strikeouts to be able to evaluate items on a case-by-case basis.
That's exactly what we're asking the commission right now.
You have to be able to say it's accessory.
This is part of the interpretation we're asking you to make. So we would want you and then ultimately the board to provide us that direction as part of this interpretation.
See, this is an ordinance amendment. How long does it last? The ordinance amendment is going to take a year, during which time you want to be able to make some interim choices on stuff that's coming in. So I don't get the difference between agreeing right now that this is fine for as an accessory use, which I don't like that idea. Particularly, I'm uncomfortable with it, and you're going to take a year to amend the ordinance to adopt that provision too, with or without the strikeouts. Question is, isn't there some procedure that can be provided whereby we can ask that the board direct staff to deal with some of these as they come in on a case-by-case basis? Without having to say that they're the accessory use is part of it.
Well, the other is to say that on a case-by-case basis, we would determine them equivalent to some use, and mm-hmm. you would have to define what we were going to determine them equivalent mm-hmm. to. That was one of the options in your staff report. Well, so if you said on a case-by-case basis, determine whether the use is equivalent to a hunting and fishing club, that in nature and intensity... then we would do that on a case-by-case
okay.
basis.
And I'd be comfortable with doing that on a case-by-case basis if you had to bring it to us, because that narrows it down. The equivalency issue is all over the place until you ask about a specific circumstance, right?
Well, you would actually tell us as part of this interpretation which use you thought it was equivalent to.
Well, we clearly can't do that today, which is... Well, I agree in part with Commissioner Murphy.
So the other option is on a case-by-case basis that staff has the ability to do is to determine that the use is accessory to a primary use of the site.
Well, that's always the case. If you decide this zip line is accessory to what they're doing, even if we pass this amendment, they won't be required to get a permit.
Well, if in fact you make the interpretation and the board agrees with the interpretation the way it's written in 2 with the strikeouts struck, then in fact we could not make the determination that they were accessory. Because we would be saying that the interpretation made by the Board of Supervisors is that in every case they need a permit, whatever level that is, and therefore they would not be accessory to a primary use on the site. So if number 2 is recommended by your commission and ultimately agreed that that's the interpretation to make in these cases, then we would not have the ability to make a case-by-case determination.
Can I add an additional consideration here? As Cammie said, if that's what occurred, and what would happen in an individual case is somebody would come into the department with an application and request that it be, you know, essentially processed as an accessory use. Let's say they came in for a building permit. And because we have this interpretation on the books now, staff would have to deny that application. The person applying could theoretically appeal that to your commission to have their case looked at individually, but you would be in a difficult position because you've already said for the record as a formal interpretation of the ordinance that these uses cannot be deemed accessory until we have some type of formal amendment in place. So it might be a good idea to give yourself some flexibility if you would like to have the ability to look at an individual case that is appealed from a staff determination that it's not accessible, then you wouldn't have something prohibiting you from making an interpretation on an individual basis. But again, that's up to your discretion. If you're comfortable going one way or another, you know, it's up to you to decide.
I haven't spoken for a while, and And at this time, I'm not prepared to concede that any of these proposed uses are accessory. I think at this time, it's way too, ahead. We've got the cart before the horse. And also, as, you know, we have the ordinances say things that tell us what to do in cases like this. And in a staff report on page 3-2, it says a land use that is not listed in table 2-2 or is not shown in a particular land use category is not allowed. So right now, staff can't.
Is there any kind of interim language that you could add similar to the language that you put on item 1 to item 2 that would help you have some flexibility similar to what County Council was suggesting? Without saying, yes, these are accessory.
Where are we on a strong?
Well,
Commissioner Murphy,
we need to have something to vote on. Commissioner,
well,
I liked number two before Scott amended it again with the strikeouts as a way to give staff flexibility and to give an applicant who was denied the ability to be appealed to us for us to make a decision, as indicated by counsel, that if we did not have that language in there, that our hands were essentially tied.
But I think Commissioner Topping and me and Commissioner O'Grady are concerned about a blanket.
Yeah, and there's no denial of appeal rights.
Yeah.
There's no denial.
Well, I thought I heard counsel say that we would be.
But that's what she's changing now.
Here, follow the bouncing ball.
Yeah, that's what she's changing now.
That's a good way to put it, Commissioner.
People won't remember that.
We kind of get
sing along with Mitch.
Yeah. This looks like where you're talking.
Would that last sentence need to be taken out?
It would. I think this would need to be put back in.
Okay.
I think you're right. With that additional language in there, you could probably strike that whole last sentence.
Why don't you read it for us, the whole thing?
Amend the Land Use Ordinance, Table 2-2, to add a permit requirement for these uses. Evaluate on a case-by-case basis other rural recreation uses to determine if they are accessory to a primary use based on the size and scale of the proposed use, its operation, and if it is consistent with the definition of use, accessory in Article 8.
I like that. I think that allows you both things.
Well, who does the evaluating? Staff?
Staff.
Isn't that back to where we were?
But that's where we were. I mean,
yeah.
If we're fashioning an ordinance to determine where each of these uses belong, what their impacts are, I mean, that's the commission's job to do that. And we've said many times before here, we don't have the information necessary to make an informed decision about that.
But this is a stopgap measure appealable to the commission, right? Is it appealable to the commission, or if the board says to?
Well, it depends on how you want to set it up. Do you want to have the people appealing it be the ones who were denied the accessory use, or the other way around? The ones who were granted the accessory use, but there were objections from neighbors or what have you.
You're going to get it both ways.
Well, my position is I don't have the evidence necessary to judge on any of these whether they should be an accessory use. And the evidence that has been presented is that they're part of a tour. And that, if that's the rationale for accessory use, then I will not support this resolution.
Well, I think we need to separate out, again, Santa Margarita Ranch. That's a specific case. We're not talking about that specific case right now, I understand.
Correct.
Is that?
I'm not.
Yeah. Nor would I be if we were asked to vote on this language. I think that's a separate matter, and which I think it's really premature to talk about in a public setting.
Perhaps, Chairman O'Grady, I could, hearing the discussion, it seems that knowing that the land use ordinance amendment could take some time, we want to be able, from a business practice, be able to give people the opportunity to continue with proposals without having to, that are smaller and lower intensity and scale to move forward. Perhaps as we're amending this language, and I think this may be what Commissioner Topping is alluding to, if we say on an interim basis until the land use amendment is completed.
That says that.
Well, perhaps a straw vote is needed, since I'm hearing disagreement amongst the commissioners, to help direct what this number two will ultimately look like. And I did add the language that Mr. Giffen suggested, so that it reads, until such time as the amendments are adopted, evaluate on a case-by-case basis. The rest of the sentence.
Okay.
So I think the usage here of the size and scale answers your question about whether staff has predefined this already. We're supposed to take Margarita out of the equation.
Right.
So I think that having the staff have the ability to determine case by case based on size and scale, there's got to be, and the director will make those determinations if it's too big or not.
I think you should add and context after scale. So it would be the size.
I think we're talking about option one here. I think number two is option one, and I think Commissioner O'Grady is absolutely right. It's the same thing as option one, and which means there's a pretty broad way to interpret almost everything to be okay, which is not what we're really concerned about, that part. And let me just go on. Number three here talks about to add special standards for the establishment of these uses as either accessory or primary use. No. They should have special standards for the establishment of these uses, period.
Well, I think number one should amend Article 8, number two, Table 2, and number three, Article 4, and accessory and primary shouldn't even be mentioned here, because that's always the case on any land use. There's accessory possible use that's determined by staff. The one concern you might have there, if that's the case and they make that decision, we have no input in it. But that, to me, is a whole separate issue. Accessory use is a whole different issue than what we're talking about here today. That applies on every land use, every situation there could be accessory uses, more frequently in ag than others. I think what we're talking about here is other recreational uses. We need to have them prepare the amendments to address that. But the accessory use issue shouldn't even come into play, because that is a separate call.
Here's why I'm concerned that about these new uses. That because they're new, they may have unforeseen consequences, and we know for a fact up until this point that staff is using as a rationale for accessory use classification use as a tour, mm-hmm. and that. To me, is a bridge too far. I mean, you can have a Ferris wheel out there and say it's on a tour. I mean, I just think it's premature to grant that kind of option at this point until we have more information about the impacts of these various uses.
But my point, that's a separate issue from amending the land use ordinance to address rural recreation. There is a definition of accessory uses. If we want to debate that and amend that, then that's a separate discussion.
Well, yeah.
Well, we're just talking about our motion here, though, number two. We
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think I don't like any of that language in there. They can all, the accessory issue is a whole separate issue, and they can use that in any case.
Could you take out the phrase if they are accessory?
Well, that's the point.
Then we need to talk about accessory issue, not about the recreational uses. So they're two separate things in my mind.
Could you take out the phrase if they are accessory to an existing primary use, because you're talking about rural recreation uses anyway?
But again,
I think it comes.
How would we make that case by case determination? Would we make a case by case determination that those are equivalent to the listed uses in that definition? Because basically, we've told you we're struggling with doing that. So
exactly,
that would be part of your interpretation to say that on a case by case basis, we would find these uses equivalent to.
Well, in that case, let's just go back to your initial language where the strikeouts, and just hold the whole thing off for a year and a half.
Well, the equivalency issue, that's a separate issue also. They have the right to determine equivalency under the current regulations.
Well, correct, but what we've said in this case is
in this specific time, you're asking us to make that determination. But to address this question here, that doesn't go away. The next time an issue comes along, you can make an equivalency determination.
If not on these uses.
Well, not in this one, no, obviously.
But if somebody came in with some use we'd never heard of or some kind of new animal, then yes, we still have the ability to make the equivalent.
I think there's three of us who are saying we're really uncomfortable with case-by-case determinations on accessory uses and allowing things. And there's two of us, well, one of us who's not uncomfortable.
I'm uncomfortable with the language in here.
Somebody.
Then there's the old flip-flopper down here.
I'm not
but actually,
are necessary in every case.
Okay.
We may find that special standards aren't required. So this is basically just saying, look at the need for special standards or not.
So the way it's phrased shouldn't be the need to evaluate the need to amend the ordinance. You're going to have to do that. It's a question of whether the special standards are required.
Yeah, here's the language I had for that, Ms. Griffin. I started with add, and it just basically says add special standards for the establishment of these additional uses as appropriate for each use and provide detailed staff analysis report as evidence for the need these standards.
You might not need to have any special standards.
So well, that's why I say as appropriate. There might not be any. Yeah. We might not need any. It's just
instead of evaluate, you're saying?
I'm just saying amend the ordinance as required or as necessary. That's all I'm saying. And do an analysis to back up the recommendations.
Well, they will.
In every case, we will do an analysis. That is required when we do any kind of amendment to our general plan or ordinance.
Okay.
So, again, basically we're asking them to make these three amendment proposals for us to look at, and then we're interpreting, we're interpreting that zip lines do fall under rural recreation.
Tentatively.
We're saying amend the ordinance.
Right.
Basically, you're saying nothing can happen in the meantime.
Until they do that, nothing really can happen.
Right.
That's what this language says.
Exactly.
Which is not what we really want to do, but we can't figure out how to do it where it works without knowing what is out there.
The other option is back to the case-by-case determination, which puts the authority in the planning director's hands to make those calls on a case-by-case basis, potentially appealable to both your commission and the Board of Supervisors.
But that option one, was a permanent option, right? And the idea behind the prior language on item two was that this would be a temporary option.
Yes.
So that's the distinction, I think, that's important that we are clear on before we vote on this.
See, I think it's also problematic if the case-by-case basis language is in there and staff decides, as they have in the case of Santa Margarita, to interpret that as an accessory use because of the tour. And then,
Mr. Chairman, I'd also like to point out that that's not the exclusive rationale that was presented in the staff report on page 3-8 for making that determination for accessory. And perhaps looking at that summary would assist the commission in looking at how an accessory type determination could be made in the case of specifically zip lines. an equivalent discussion about the other rural recreation uses on 3-12. But it has to do with size and scale. It has to do with how it's being operated.
But my point was, if you staff in the meantime, before these ordinances are finalized, make these case-by-case decisions one way, and then the information comes to the commission, and we say we don't agree with some of these decisions, we're going to go a different route. You know, I'm concerned about the perception of unfairness because people will say, wait a minute, staff said it was okay for this particular property over here to have this particular use approved, or whether it's successful, or whatever other reason that you might decide. The commission, based on the evidence presented and the decisions we make, may say we want to go in a different direction. So I'm concerned that would be problematic as we go forward, and I'm more comfortable with, since these are new uses, taking a more cautious approach.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Topping.
Since staff brought up the parts of the report that refer to zip lines, I would like to take exception to the statement on page 3-7, paragraph 3, which says, since zip lines require a significant amount of acreage, that's exception to that, and are typically used to learn about the environment, wildlife, and history of the area you are touring through. Take exception to that, because it's not a touring use. It happens to be in this particular instance, and it happens to have an educational value. But fundamentally, zip lines are for having fun. You just want to ride down those zip lines.
You just want to have fun.
Enjoy the experience of riding the zip line. And if you learn something on the process, okay, that's great. You know more when you get... So the other thing I wanted to say was I'm glad that we're not being asked to act on Recommendation 4, because I think there's some basic questions that will have to be addressed there through staff and county council on the structures that presently exist in the tree removal issue, and if there is one, and other precedent-setting issues related to that specific case. So we backed away from that, and presumably there's some reasonable means by which the staff will address that through county council, is what I understand. We don't have to worry about Santa Margarita Ranch right now. We're not washing our hands of it.
Well, indirectly.
You've made an interpretation that then will be applied to Santa Margarita Ranch's operation, and that's
and any other
that it's not allowed until these amendments get approved.
Right.
So to recap,
Commissioner Murphy.
We've made the interpretation that this is not an equivalent use, that this is a separate land use, and we've asked to amend the land use definitions to address that, and Table 2.2 to address that, and possibly the specific standards requirements if necessary. And that's basically it, what we're doing.
Right.
The Santa Margarita. So what effect does that have on the existing zip line at Santa Margarita Ranch from here forward?
It's not permitted until after the land use ordinance has been amended. So there would be no ability under this interpretation for staff to be able to permit that operation to continue.
Okay. I want to be sure that we have addressed the concerns that the public has brought to us in public comment. I think we may have addressed most of them, but I didn't, Ms. Harvey mentioned something about the Williamson Act.
The Williamson Act allows rural recreation and camping.
So that there's no impact from that on what we're doing here today? Then.
No.
Okay. Let's see, what else? That was the only thing that I had in my notes from the public that I didn't hear discussed. Does anyone else have any notes?
Just for the record, I understand that the zip line was not part of the business license zoning clearance. It was not specific in that particular action.
when we spoke with the planner who issued that zoning clearance, she told us that she was not told that there was a zip line associated with it, and that in her mind these were the same kind of ranch tours and vineyard tours that occur regularly on agricultural operations and would be accessory to the primary uses in agriculture.
So they were not provided with this handout from Margarita Adventures as part of our staff report then?
No. Now, we do understand from the operator that they did provide this information to our tax collector's office as part of the business license, but not as part of our zoning clearance. And honestly, if they had said canopy tours, I'm not entirely certain that would have meant to the planner behind the counter zip lines. I mean, you kind of have to say zip lines to know it's zip lines. So we don't believe that that business license covers zip lines.
Okay.
And then let me ask you again. So once this amendment's passed, then a zip line wouldn't, under an ag land use category, would not ever be an accessory use. It would always have to be treated as go through the permit process.
Whatever
comes out of the amendment.
That was,
yeah, however
whatever
it turns out, but not today.
No, I mean after the amendments were adopted.
But the amendments haven't even been written. There might be certain like smaller zip lines or depending on small zip lines and large properties.
It would be subject to whatever we come up with.
A very minor permit, just a director review or site plan.
But whatever we come up with would apply. That accessory only applies to where there's not already a land use requirement or regulation covering or ordinance covering that.
Yes, perhaps I could add, Chairman O'Grady, Commissioner Murphy, hypothetically, it could be anything. It could be we could go on to further explain what an accessory use is or identify what would be the appropriate level of permit type for not just zip lines but the whole suite of uses. One option that I think you may just want to consider, it seems like from the three motions – options that are on the screen now, there's some of them, there's unanimous, perhaps, agreement amongst the commission, and on other ones, there's not. So I just wanted you to know as an option, you could take individual votes on each one of those.
Given it has established about allowing economic opportunities in the county, and I think that we should not tie the planning director's hands in this regard. I think we should evaluate on a case-by-case basis until the appropriate amendments have been processed.
Any other discussion?
Oh, I see. So you're saying until the amendments are actually adopted, they should have some discretion on
it. Correct.
Any other discussion?
Yeah. I have a problem with number two, even though I moved it for discussion purposes, because the question is, should the undeclared, unknown status of a particular zip line drive the priorities of the board when it comes to assigning projects on the to-do list for the Planning Commission? And I would say no. I think it's unreasonable to put that kind of priority on it. I would think that some reasonable method of addressing some of these on a provisional case-by-case basis, subject to full appeal, would make a lot of sense from a practical perspective. Wouldn't prejudice the direction ultimately of a full review of these types of uses. It just seems to me like we have a professional staff and we need to provide some affirmation of our faith in their professional judgments.
Well, we have existing ordinances and they say exactly what should be done in the event a use is not allowed. And that includes ones that the staff is uncertain about, which is why they're here today. And so unless we provide clear guidance to enable staff to make those interim judgments, then it reverts back to it's not allowed until the ordinance are amended otherwise. So I think that's a bridge too far, and I'm not prepared to grant this some sort of interim decision-making process on uses for which we really don't understand the impacts, as we've discussed.
If we're worried about Santa Margarita Ranch, then we should say so. It's clearly a self-created hardship if this language were to go into effect. They put it in without asking, and so let's call a spade a spade. And they called it agritourism, and that was fuzzy enough that it could be interpreted, perhaps. But there's got to be some resolution of the safety issues for that particular facility, however it's done. Clearly, the staff report already says there's a building permit requirement. It's in bold letters. So at the very minimum, we should support staff's direction or suggestions in that direction to carry out a building permit process. But beyond that, 3,000 lineal feet is 3,000 lineal feet, and it seems to me like there's going to have to be some way of reconciling that fact with the way the ordinance is right now.
Well, and I am concerned, too, that because the time this could, we don't know, this could be 2 years down the road before this amendment's adopted, depending on the action of the Board of Supervisors. So I do have some concern during the interim, everything comes to a standstill if we got other people.
It won't come to a standstill because staff will make a decision on Santa Margarita, just to use that as an example that's in front of us, and the decision will be it's not allowed with given this language. Okay, then Santa Margarita will appeal. I imagine they have appeal rights, and so whatever the ordinances say, that's what will happen. But it's not going to just stand there and nothing and be paralyzed.
But didn't council already tell us that if you take this option as it is currently before you, you have effect established a precedent for the commission? I really speak against supporting this motion, and
eloquently.
Yeah, sorry, so I just won't go on any further. I think we should just go ahead and vote this up or down.
Okay, Commissioner Murphy, you still have your light on.
I don't like having this in here either. It's kind of we need to request the staff.
And that would include engineering and safety and making sure that they were designed correctly, as well as anything else we might look at associated with a building permit.
What level of permit? How would you determine what level of permit?
It's a building
permit.
It's
just a building permit. There wouldn't be any
construction permit. It is not a land use.
It's not a land use permit.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
So I just wanted to clear that up for Commissioner Topping.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Ramona, would you please call the roll? This is on number 2 of the resolution proposed.
Commissioner Topping?
No.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
No.
Commissioner Irving?
No.
Chairperson O'Grady?
Yes. Motion fails.
I would like
3-2.
I would like to move that on option 2, get my right glasses on here, with the strikeouts be put back in place, allowing the staff to evaluate on a case-by-case basis. Do I have a second?
Second.
Well, second that.
I'll second it too.
But that only. So on your so there's two arguments. One here is the accessory use issue, and the other is no permitted uses until the amendments addressed or actually enacted. So which one are you trying to address there?
Let's see, permit requirements.
What you're saying is you want to allow accessory uses is what they just added back.
Uses to determine if they are accessory to an existing primary use based on size, scale, and context of proposed use. I support the way it's written on the screen.
Okay. but you're okay with no use permits until the use ordinance amendments have been completed. The last sentence.
Where they're not accessory, right.
Where they're not accessory. So you want to add, you want to get rid of that strikeout then?
Well, it's the same thing.
It's not there. It's struck out. She took out.
She took out the strikeout that was on the next line from until such time and evaluate case by case, and et cetera, on the amendment that was on the option that was just defeated. And now that's been put back. So,
if I could I request that perhaps we, Commissioner Irving, read the finding as you would like it to be incorporated into your motion? Just so we're clear for the record.
So do you want me to read what's here? Sure.
Right.
So my motion is to amend the Land Use Ordinance Table 2.2 to add permit requirements for other rural recreational uses until such time as the amendments are adopted, evaluate on a case-by-case basis other rural recreational uses to determine if they are accessory to an existing primary use, based on the size, scale, and context of the proposed use, its operation, and if it is consistent with the definition of use accessory in Article 8. Other recreational uses would not be permitted until after the land use ordinance amendments have been completed.
Do you mean other rural recreational uses that are not accessory? I'm just concerned that we're being inconsistent.
This is to allow staff to evaluate determine if they are accessory to a primary uses. Other uses that are not accessory to a primary use would not be permitted.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think either way worked, because accessory use is not a quote permitted use, it's just an accessory use.
Really. Exactly. Staff gets to make the determination, is it accessory or not. Somebody who has no other business going on their property and wants to put in what's one of the choices here, a cable ski lake, and has no other agricultural activity or primary use going on, I think that would be clear. The staff would know that's not an accessory use.
So just for clarification, the last sentence would read, other rural recreational uses that are not accessory to a primary use would not be permitted until after the land use ordinance amendments have been completed.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Thank you.
Any further discussion?
Yes. just like to insert, after evaluate on a case-by-case basis, subject to appeal. It's understood, but I think it would be good to.
Does that need to be there, counsel?
You would not need to be there in order for somebody to appeal it. But if you want to just clarify, that would be fine.
It's a clarification.
There's no harm in that. Motion maker, are you okay with that? Okay. Any
other rural recreational uses as appropriate, period. This would include establishing special findings for these uses in the agriculture category.
Move we approve.
Second.
Any discussion? I'll be darned. No discussion.
Running out of time.
We still do have time. Well, okay. No discussion, so Ramona, please call the roll.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Before you move on,
O'Grady?
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I did hear the commission discussing potentially wanting to ask the board to prioritize this in a certain way. You can actually make that as part of your motion here if you want to do that. It's up to you.
I'll leave it up to them.
That's why I changed my vote.
Enough's enough.
Okay. So in item one, you mentioned other recreational uses. Are you going to look at possibly including things other than those specific uses mentioned? Did you try to keep it open-ended?
If something comes up between now and then and we can add it in, we will. Does give us some kind of flexibility because we couldn't predict half these uses initially. So, the other active rural recreation gives us a little bit of flexibility.
So how do you see this coming back to us then?
It does go on to the board. Your resolution will go on to the board, and they'll make a determination. And then based on that, if they do decide that amendments are necessary, it'll be a matter of prioritizing those amendments with the rest of the department's workload.
We hope it fares better than the events ordinance.
So our request that you prepare amendments has to go to the Board of Supervisors?
Yeah.
We can't have you bring it back to us and then we send the amendments to them?
No.
We don't order amendments.
No wonder it takes a year.
One of the things that we can do as part of your, or as a second part, when we take this forward to the Board of Supervisors, we can also at the same time take the request to authorize the preparation of the amendments to the board also. That is the first step in any amendment, general plan or ordinance. The first thing we do is ask the board, do you want us to do this or not? And they say yes or no. And that's for either private amendments, ones that are initiated by members of the public, or a county-initiated amendment. So we can do that as another item on that same day. We take your recommendation. Since your recommendation includes doing amendments, it would make sense. So make it go a little faster.
So this whole thing could change at the board.
Well, sure. Okay. Are you finished with your light there, Commissioner Murphy?
Sorry we spent so much time talking.
Okay, before I ask for the pro forma motions to conclude this hearing, I would like to invite back all the younger folks that are here today, including one of the older folks who I know in the back row, because as you've heard today, this is not the end of this story. And so the commission looks forward to hearing from you again as staff goes about their work in preparing these proposed amendments and changes in the ordinance, and we really would welcome and need your input to help us make the best decisions we possibly can. So thank you again for coming here today. All right. I would entertain a motion to take all testimony and documents into the record.
So moved.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion passes 5-0. And then I would like a motion to adjourn the meeting to the next regular meeting, which will be on February 9th, 2012.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. None. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you all very much. Have a great day.
Before you